using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Thursday, the 9th of December, year of our Lord 2021, day 637 of the world's emergency. And so today we're going to talk about the criminal way our medical system has just turned into murders, mercenary murders, murders for hire. And the research that is on our way. We're going to have an interview in the third hour with a researcher who has followed the trail of some very, very troubling research, troubling from two aspects, what they are preparing to do in Canada and how they are conducting their research. They fled this country because of restrictions. We've seen that movie before, right? And they're in Canada. And they're creating humanized mice, but they're working on something that perhaps may be far more dangerous. So we're going to be talking about that in the third hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, you know, we frequently speak about suffocating regulation, and the government certainly has become suffocating, demanding and intruding into every aspect of our lives. But this story in particular really hit home to me. You have the British Medical Association, which is like the AMA. It's the BMA, the American Medical Association, British Medical Association. And they have joined, interestingly enough, with Asthma UK. Asthma UK is a charity that is supposed to be there to help people with asthma. And the two of them have agreed that asthma sufferers should still wear the masks because it's mandated by government. This is one of the most obvious and heinous disregard for human life and for their mission. The BMA, in terms of doing no harm to people, what about that? Whatever happened to those ethics? And about putting people's lives and health first. And then this other group, which is specifically about this condition, asthma. They said, 99% of the people who have these conditions can still wear face masks. Let me tell you something. I know what this is like. All my life, I watched my father struggle with asthma. I had a cousin who died from an asthma attack. She was just in her garden, and it hit her. Wasn't doing anything strenuous from the appearance of it. And she couldn't even get back to the house and get to an inhaler. And she died. It is absolutely the callous disregard. And what these people have become, how mercenary they have become. This is about nothing other than money. Nothing other than money. Shameless. Criminal. They said asthma sufferers can, quote, manage to wear a face mask or a face covering. Well, you try to do that, pal. Most people, they said, with asthma or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease should wear face masks when required by the government. See, your life is nothing to these people. Their oath is nothing to them. You will do what the government says or die. That's just what this is about. Absolute authoritarianism and totalitarianism. They said masks are mandatory in a number of settings. Therefore, you wear them in public transport. In shops, airports, and taxis are among the settings where the rules apply in Northern Ireland, designed to prevent the spread of COVID. They said, quote, there are small numbers of, and all this is their press release. And they had a quote from a Dr. Stout, who said there is a small number of exemptions to wearing a mask, and they're very, very small. So the vast majority of people should be wearing a mask. The BMA's mask-wearing message, British Medical Association, came after a woman who was not wearing a mask on a train said she believed that she was asthmatic because she was exempt. Asthma is not an exemption, he said. you'll do as you're told, even if it kills you. That's my comment. But he just said asthma is not an exemption. Stout. He calls himself a doctor. See, these types of people are rewarded by the system. The people who put their career on the line to help people, when the hospital administrators, whose only focus is on their greed and their money, those people putting their career on the line and getting fired, that ends that. Okay, that you have the good people are being purged out of the system. Whether you're talking about law enforcement, you're talking about hospitals, it's a common thing. Our institutions are already so corrupt that they purge out anybody with any integrity whatsoever. That's how bad they've become. It's been that way for a while, but it has really escalated, and they're not even trying to hide it anymore. So he says asthma is not an exemption. Asthma UK and the British Lung Foundation are very good and strong on this too, that anyone suffering from those conditions should be wearing a face mask. Well, let me just show you, since these people who specialize in asthma, these doctors who should know better, don't seem to care, since you may not have anybody in your family that had asthma. Fortunately, I did not get it, and as I've gotten older, I've got a touch of it. I just want to show you this video of an asthma sufferer. And there is some, it's a silent, so I'll narrate it. There are some tips there for how to try to help somebody if they're having an asthma attack. This girl is about to face her nightmare. This is some surveillance footage in a public area. She's stretching. She starts exercising. So she forgets the precautions she needs. Now she's stopped and she's bending over and really struggling to breathe. Her chest feels tight and painful, it says. It's difficult to breathe. So she decides after a while she's going to walk over to the table. She's looking around to see if there's anybody there that can help her. She can't even call out for help. She kind of waves to somebody. Some people out in the background. She tries to get over to the table. She collapses on the floor. Now these people come over kind of cautiously. They start to realize this woman calls somebody else. What can they do to help her? Someone is having a sudden asthma attack. If the person is conscious, what they show here now is a reenactment of somebody else. You set her upright. First of all, call for emergency medical help. You set them upright. If they have an inhaler with them, you start putting the inhaler in them. You shake it, put it in. Then give them a chance to breathe, then put it in, take 4 breaths from the spacer, and go on back and forth. And so they're just kind of going back and forth using the inhaler and getting her to breathe. Now, if the person has passed out, and they show this next, if the person is unconscious, you just start doing CPR and calling the ambulance. Yeah, my father never went anywhere without his inhaler. That's what killed my cousin. But no, today we have COVID. You should be worried about COVID. COVID is the only thing that matters, and nothing else matters. And you do what the government says, because that's the thing that really matters. We don't care about you. We don't care about your life. They're giving people toxic genetic code injections. Certainly they don't care about our lives. LifeSite News has an article, a doctor, Paul Merrick, and he gave a presentation on December the 7th, just 2 days ago, with the Truth for Health Foundation. He's a medical doctor, and since he tried to help people and was concerned about helping people, he got fired. Hospital purged him. He was stripped of his ability to treat patients. He began this back in March of 2020. As Trump was rolling out his deadly protocols that had been dictated to him by Fauci. You know, oh, we got to get the ventilators, the invasive ventilators, intubation. And I've reported to you that after some time has gone by, some of the doctors are speaking out, pulmonologists and others, respiratory specialists, saying, I saw this, and I thought, that's never been a treatment for a respiratory illness. Why are we doing that? That's going to really make things a lot worse to get it to that point, invasive intubation with these ventilators. And yes, they did. They knew that it was going to kill people. When I interviewed pandemic nurse, her book, you know, she was in Florida. She heard about this, and it's like, all right, I'm up for this. I'm going to do what? I'm putting my life on the line to help people. Nobody showed up. So she kept hearing about how bad it was in New York, so she went to New York. After a couple of days, you know, she reported in. After a couple of days, they still hadn't contacted her. Then they finally contact her and bring her in. It's like it's not an emergency for them. The doctor shows her all of these patients on ventilators, intubated. And says, yeah, you know, 85, 95% of these patients die. She's like, what's going on with this? And she said, and it really was not an emergency. And so she wrote a book about it. Well, Dr. Paul Merrick, co-founder of Frontline Critical Care COVID Alliance, one of the first organizations to develop a successful multi-drug protocol for treating COVID-19 patients. He is a chief of pulmonary and critical care medicine at Eastern Virginia Medical School. And he used to practice at a hospital that is run by Centara. Now, Centara is a very, very big corporation. And that's the problem. They operate in two states. Centara has, I looked them up, 3,739 beds with the various facilities. They have 853 members who pay them for this service, so kind of a you know, they operate the, it's a hospital system, so they have members. They have 10 nursing centers, they have 3 assisted living centers, and they operate in Virginia and North Carolina. Interestingly enough, they began as a Christian charity back in 1888, and now they become a commercial mercenary spot to kill people. That's what they've become. Listen to what happened in his story. His group developed a protocol called Math Plus. They did it in March 2020. This is, this thing was kicking off, right? At a time when there was a complete void, he said, of available treatment options. The NIH, the CDC, the WHO all said there was no treatment. You just give these people supportive care. You put them off in the corner. You put them on the invasive ventilator because, you know, that's cash, big cash. You get the $13,000. Because, you know, if they got a respiratory illness, whether it's COVID or not, but you get a PCR test, and if you can show that it's a, well, that's right. At the beginning of it, they didn't have the PCR tests. We found out in August of 2020, the American Hospital Association was complaining because they said CMS is not giving us our bonus of 20%. They want now to see the tests that we had. You told us at the beginning of this that you didn't have any tests, and the ones that you had didn't work, and they've now come out and I talked about how those tests didn't work. That's another article that just came out last day or two. But they said, you told us just to do a clinical diagnosis. If it looks like COVID, it is COVID. Any respiratory illness, COVID, right? I'm sure that lady there that you saw collapse as she was exercising, who had asthma, no, that was COVID. Because if I can get her in the hospital, $13,000. And then 20% on everything that I do for her. And if I can put her on a ventilator, $39,000. So it's supportive care, said the NIH, the CDC, and WHO. Just put them over in the corner, put them on an intubator. And look, you're already paid for your ventilator. That $13,000 and the $39,000, $52,000, and the ventilator only cost you $50,000. And now you can charge them for daily use of it. And you can get a 20% bonus on that, too. We have turned these people into thieves. The medical system has been trending towards just vicious commercialism for a long time. And boy, with what happened with Trump's financial incentives in 2020 continued by Biden, we have turned the corner on that, and there's no turning back on these hospitals. The medical system has completely lost its way. lost the plot. So they said, it's just a supportive system. This doctor, Dr. Paul Merrick, said, we said, that's completely absurd. There are things that we can do for people. He said, so patients were admitted to New York hospitals. They were put on ventilators. They got no specific treatment. And the mortality rate there was 90%. He said he developed a protocol last year, around March, that consisted of a regimen of FDA-approved drugs, including methylprednisolone, ascorbic acid, that's just vitamin C, and anticoagulant heparin. That's a very, very common blood thinner. He says it's expanded over time based on the evolving science to include antiandrogen therapy, vitamin C, ivermectin, and fluvoxamine. So I don't know. I always thought ascorbic acid and vitamin C were the same thing. So nevertheless, though he was never permitted to use ivermectin in his hospital, he said he was allowed to use other medications and enjoyed success with them. I say, that's, why can't you use ivermectin? Again, this is simply off-label. It's got a very well-understood safety profile, far, far more understood than any of these vaccines, because they have a very long history with it. So it's not dangerous. And the FDA has always told us, prior to COVID, the FDA promoted the use of off-label drugs. They said, yeah, it's perfectly fine for physicians to do this based on their clinical judgment. In other words, we've evaluated for the safety profile. I don't know if it's effective or not, but sure, you can try it if you want. That's always been the attitude, not for ivermectin. Instead, you've got the FDA It is comical that they would come out and start calling it horse medicine. And that shows you just how dishonest. That's, I think, probably the most obvious signal of what the FDA has become, that whole campaign there. Anyway, he said, we did really well compared to the national average. He said he saw less than a mortality rate less than 10% in the COVID patients that he treated with that multi-drug sequence I just talked about. He said, and then inexplicably, on October the 5th, the hospital system, Sentara, sent out a system-wide memorandum basically targeting me personally and banning the use of ivermectin, fluvoxamine, and the anti-androgen therapy, and discouraging the use of vitamin C. Well, this is not the first time we've seen the FDA discourage the use of vitamins and other things like that. Because even though they're supposed to be the Food and Drug Administration, they don't care about nutrition, and they certainly don't care about vitamins and minerals. They want to prohibit them, and they have targeted that before. It was in 1994, I think it was, that I went to the convention of the Libertarian Party in Salt Lake City, and Orrin Hatch was speaking there because at the time, in 1994, the FDA was trying to ban the sale of most vitamins, including vitamin C, because it was in competition to the pharmaceutical products. And Orrin Hatch was taking the side of freedom in that particular case, because there were a lot of companies that made vitamins and other things like that located in Utah, where he was a senator. So anyway, it has a long history. So on October the 5th, he says they targeted him specifically, discouraged the use of vitamin C. Instead, they told everybody, you got to use remdesivir now. So he said, and he pointed out, and I've talked about this as well, how it increases your risk of renal failure and liver failure, kidney failure and liver failure. He said he was, quote, forced to use that toxic medication, unquote, rather than the medications that I knew were safe, effective, and, wait for it, cheap. Yeah, cheap. That's the issue. It's the money. He added that the week after the memorandum took effect, he dealt with 7 COVID patients who were suffering from pneumonia and was not permitted, COVID pneumonia, they say, and he was not permitted to use the drugs that he would have otherwise prescribed, and so he used remdesivir. All 7 patients died. He says it was an absolute outrage. The seven patients who died included a 32-year-old woman and a 40-year-old man. He said, I had to stand by and watch idly as these patients died. It broke my heart, and I was broken. So I really had no option. It was either quit or file an injunction against the hospital. So he fought them. Good for him. He decided not to quit. Instead, he filed a lawsuit against the hospital system November the 9th, arguing that the drugs he was using to treat patients were safe, FDA-approved drugs. And on the same day, he filed suit against Centara. The Journal of Intensive Care Medicine retracted an article that he had co-authored on his Math Plus protocol, citing, quote, concerns about the accuracy of COVID-19 hospital mortality data reported in the article pertaining to Centara. So, you know, he's got something. They diagnose somebody with a serious respiratory disease and a positive PCR test. They give them, quote-unquote, supportive care, which is not supportive at all. They put them on invasive ventilators and 90% of them die. He has, on the other hand, a very cheap protocol. That's the problem. And 90% live. So which one are they going to go with? The money talks. The move to retract the article came after Centara reached out to JICM, having, quote, conducted a careful review of our data for the patients with COVID-19 from March the 22nd to July 20th. And they arrived at the conclusion that the article co-authored by Merrick calculated an incorrect mortality rate, which was used to back up his claim of risk reduction. However, the attorney says the lawsuit is not about the journal article. He said this case is about whether a hospital administration can legally prohibit critically ill COVID patients from receiving information and treatment if they so decide that it is medically appropriate for them, about safe, FDA-approved, and potentially life-saving medicines as determined by their attending physician. And you see, by putting them, they isolate the patients, they put them on this invasive ventilator, and then they keep the family away. And they don't allow the doctors to do anything. This is absolute murder. Murder for hire. They make their money. The people who are diagnosing the cause of death, they get paid a bonus if it is COVID. Even the families get a gift from the Trump administration, because that's where it started. They actually paid them for burial expenses if they go along with this COVID fraud. I mean, the thing is just bought from start to finish. From going into the hospital to going into the ground, the Trump administration incentivized financially this mass murder. And Operation Warp Speed is a mass murder bioweapon. And you have Alex after 635 days. Say, well, if he doesn't admit that they fooled him on this, then I'm going to, let's see. I'm going to go to war with him. That's what I'm going to do. What a phony. What a phony. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Blood on his hands, too. You got blood on your hands, Alex. We'll see how God deals with you. Maybe soon. Maybe soon. This case is about whether a hospital administration can legally prohibit critically ill patients from getting treatment that's FDA approved with the determination of their attending physician, said the lawyer. While Centara has stated that it did not ask this journal to retract the article, he still said, yeah, you know, this is retaliation. And it is. It is. Anyway, they basically, he said, violated the basic patient-physician relationship. Of course. We cannot have a parent-child relationship, a doctor-patient relationship, a pastor-church relationship. We can't have any a person-to-person relationship. All relationships must go away. You must have a relationship with Big Brother and Big Brother only. Everything. for Big Brother. No, no, no. None of this person-to-person stuff. And they're going to penetrate every sphere of authority in our society because it is a totalitarian design. He said it's the doctor who decides on the best treatment for his patient. We're not telling doctors what to do. It's the doctor we want. Let doctors be doctors. Let doctors at the bedside decide the best treatment for their patients, whatever that may be. But no, we're going to have a one-size-fits-all process. It's going to be dictated because of politics, just like these masks on people with asthma. You don't care about anything other than what the government dictates. What does Fauci say? It's a game of Simon Says. It's a dictatorship. Unfortunately, the hospital, he says, and the federal government are now interfering with physicians' ability to treat their patients. He said what happened to him is not an uncommon thing. It's happening across the country. Doctors are being targeted. They're losing their licenses because they want to prescribe off-label medications that are safe, and the FDA has always approved that for off-label. Merrick described his punishment and that of other doctors as a moral outrage. He added that he's speaking out, not just for me and my patients, but to start a dialogue about treating COVID-19 using methods other than those recommended by powerful interests. People in this country need to know how we're being held hostage by these very powerful forces. We'll be right back. Stay with us. American Heart Association, their journal, and you saw this last week. Actually, it was about a week ago that you had Twitter censoring links to the American Heart Association to protect these murderers, these pharmaceutical murderers and their Trump shots, their Trump juice. So that was about a week ago that they censored that. And now there's a new article out. And I have a theory. It's just a hunch. But, you know, their response to it when they were censored, it was put in their journal called Circulation. That's the American Heart Association. On the 16th of November, their research team, led by former cardiac surgeon Stephen Grundy, applied a cardiac test to measure a patient's five-year risk of a new acute coronary syndrome. The abstract contains a 14-point increase in the five-year risk of acute coronary syndrome and participants. And so after people started putting it on social media, they were pressured and they came back and said, well, you know, they attached to that study a thing saying, well, we've attached, quote, an expression of concern to the study. And then Twitter started put a label. And if anybody would post a link to Circulation Magazine, Twitter last week was warning users against traveling to the website of the American Heart Association's journal, telling them that the destination website might be unsafe. And that is typically what you see these people doing. People say, well, I can't go to your website because it's supposedly got viruses and malware and all this stuff because, you know, Google says so and Twitter says so. And I put up a thing that says, warning, this link may be unsafe. No, actually, it's the jab that is unsafe. The link was perfectly good. and then it gives reasons for why it might be unsafe. Malicious links could steal your personal information. It could harm your electronic devices. It could mislead people and disrupt their experience. It could have violence and misleading content, all that stuff. So they put that label on links to the American Heart Association, which may have done exactly, this is my theory, it might have made these people mad enough that they push back. And so now we have, a week later, another article from the American Heart Association and their journal, Circulation. As of December the 6th, on Monday, another article went up, says that 97.8% of adolescents and young adults with myocarditis had a COVID-19 shot. So this is the second one. They looked at cases reporting myocarditis in young people with an average age of 15.8 years old. And they found 136 patients, that's 97.8% of them, followed an mRNA vaccine. 131 of them, 94.2% of them, following the Pfizer vaccine. And 91.4% occurred after the second dose. Symptoms started with a median of 2 days after vaccination. They said, we retrospectively collected data on patients less than 21 years old and presenting before July the 4th of this year. So that's pretty early on. That was the very beginning of this. Who had suspected myocarditis within 30 days of vaccination. And so they're finding that, you know, with the Pfizer vaccine, they're getting, 94% of them are, this is happening after the Pfizer vaccine. 94% of the people got the Pfizer vaccine, the teens were getting this. And 91% of those who got that occurred after the second dose. And altogether, with both of them, it was just about 98% of them. It was induced by the vaccine. Conclusion, they said most cases of suspected COVID-19 vaccine myocarditis occurring in persons less than 21 years old have a mild clinical course with rapid resolution of symptoms. However, future studies should evaluate risk factors and long-term outcomes. As many doctors, including some that I have interviewed here, have said, there is no such thing as minor or mild myocarditis. This is what they're doing to try to appease the system. Perhaps if we did a long-term outcome, it might look something like, I don't know, a phase one, phase two, phase three study, which is typically supposed to happen over a 10-year period. But there have been 666 cases of heart disease. Oh, that's an interesting number. 666 in 12 to 17-year-olds after the COVID shots. Before this, there were less than 2 cases per year for the past 30-plus years. Listen to what this funeral director in the UK is saying about what he is seeing and his customers.
You don't know me. My name's John. I'm a funeral director based in Milton Keynes. I run a funeral home called Milton Keynes Family Funeral Services. And a quick search online for that will find me and verify who I am. So many of you will know me. So I'll just give you an update as to where we are at this time, and it is the 6th of December 2021. So what we're seeing is a large number, an unnaturally large number of deaths due to heart attack, stroke, aneurysm, and these are all as a direct result of thrombosis, embolisms in the lungs, the legs, various places that's causing these deaths. And these are well documented by the local coroners. These are well documented across the country. Nobody seems to be concerned by the alarming rise in them, you know. I used to see a blood clot very, very rarely, and now I've seen more this year than I have in the previous 14, to give you an idea. I've written to the Chief Coroner of England. He isn't concerned. I've had no response for weeks and weeks, and then I had an email from his secretary saying he's not interested. There you go. This is the guy who's supposed to be protecting us from harm. So we're seeing those deaths. The other type of death that I'm seeing, which is more distressing for me personally, is people who are getting sick now as their immune systems finally give up. So they've had the jabs maybe 6-8 months ago, and it's been eating away at their immune system, and now they're struggling to fight off things like the common cold. So we're in winter, and as you'll be aware, there are colds and flus about in this time of the year. These people can't fight it off, and the government are very quick to label it Omicron, a new variant, you know, and they are sick, but they're sick with basic things like the common cold. Their immune systems are decimated, and if you think about it logically, much like, for example, a cancer patient. So when you get a cancer patient and they're on chemotherapy, it decimates their immune system. And one of the things that they have to be extremely careful of is, because they've got no immune system, a basic cold, common cold or a flu can kill them. And this is what...
Right. And yeah, that's what you have to leave if you take away the immune system, which is what this is designed to do. So we have Twitter and its new CEO calling the American Heart Association a dangerous site. Don't go there. Dangerous, not to you, not to your computer. Dangerous to their narrative. You have Reuters chairman is a top investor in Pfizer, and he is a board member of Pfizer. This is by LifeSite News, and they put themselves out as a fact checker. Yeah, that's right. They have branded themselves as a news agency with integrity and freedom from bias. Yeah, that's right. That's right. They absolutely do. In fact, a 2021 article praises Reuters as one of the top four unbiased independent world news sources. Except they suppress information, they twist information. And look, I'm biased, no doubt about it. I try to be honest in what I say, and I will talk about things that I know are going to harm me, whether it's making me an enemy of the government or whether it is making me politically homeless because people don't like to hear criticism of Trump. And they, you know, the people who typically see government that it should have a limited role, those people who should know better have become cheerleaders of Trump. And whenever I talk about it, and he is still a kingmaker. I mean, he's going around in one race after the other endorsing people. He's planning on running in 2024. He is very much a current news item. This is not, well, he's gone. Why don't you just shut up and talk about Biden? I do shut up and I do talk about Biden. But Trump is still an operative. The question is, who is he operating for? Is he operating on your behalf, on his behalf, on the behalf of other people who have put him in place? Who is he working for? What is his agenda? You should pay attention to that. I'm not supposed to criticize Alex Jones. I mean, I can criticize Mark Levin for pushing the vaccine, but I can't criticize Alex Jones for calling it 4D chess. I'm not supposed to criticize him for Stop the Steal. I didn't do that because I was a disgruntled employee. I did it because I was a disgruntled American while I was an employee. And so there are certain things that you're not supposed to talk about. You know, it's just like a doctor. If a doctor tries to help people and really honestly try to help them, they get kicked out of the hospital. They get their license attacked, reviewed over and over again. If you're in journalism and you talk about what is honestly happening about this, everybody comes after you, especially if you point out how somebody's pet politician is involved in all this, or the person that they love to listen to. The FDA is now claiming that it needs till 2096 to fully release the Pfizer vaccine data. Now you think, well, we heard this story before, right? Yeah, I covered it several weeks ago. At that point in time, you had the absurd situation where they said they needed 55 years, and it was 2076. Now, as a new American is pointing out, they've upped it by another 20 years. They're going to slow it down even more. I think they started looking around saying, wait a minute, I might still be alive when this stuff comes out, and I don't want that to happen during my lifetime. So they've upped it from 55 years to 75 years. What is it that they're trying to hide? This is pretty, how many smoking guns do we need to have, right? The FDA is saying it needs a full 75 years now. Previously, they said 55 years to release the vaccine information, such as safety, efficacy, what kind of testing protocols they used, and adverse reaction reports, among other data. And what they're saying is, you know, they got to have first 55 years, now 75 years, when they only spent 108 days to review the same data prior to granting an emergency use authorization for the vaccine. But of course, when that happened, you had Trump and you had Mark Meadows. Yeah, he's with the House Freedom Caucus and he's, you know, a Christian and all this, right? And he calls up and he says, "You release that now." Trump goes on to Twitter, "You know, you release that now, you're fired." So they released it after 108 days. It was criminal fraud. You know, the FDA, the Fraudulent Drug Administration. You know, that one. According to the Justice Department, and this is Biden's Justice Department now. See, it's not Trump versus Biden. It's Trump and Biden versus you. It's the federal government versus you. In case you haven't noticed, our government has been taken over. It is hostile to us and our interests. They said, "Well, we got about 451,000 pages. Every page must be reviewed in order to redact what it terms, quote, confidential business and trade secret information for Pfizer." So it's to protect Big Pharma's secrets, but not their trade secrets. It's to protect the other secrets. It would be bad enough if their money and their patents took precedent over public health. If this is an emergency, then it ought to be an emergency enough that you break that veil of penetration. If somebody sees the trade secrets and somebody starts to manufacture something in competition with somebody's patent, then you can come after them. But if you're going to mandate as a condition of having a life, having a job, being able to travel, being able to go to school, being able to buy groceries, or being hauled off to a prison, or being given tens of thousands of dollars in fines on a regular basis, if that's what the government is going to do, you better show us what's in there. And you break that veil of secrecy. But no, what they're saying with this is that their profits, even if this were, if this was only about their trade secrets, they're saying their profits are more important than your health, which is exactly what this is about. Their profits are more important than your health. And it's a way for the government to control you. As LifeSite News says, well, it's hard to believe. I'm sorry, this is New American. It's hard to believe that it would take 75 years to redact names and secret trade information from the documents. It's difficult to believe, said an attorney who's working on behalf of this Freedom of Information request. He says, and if you find what you're reading difficult to believe, that is because it is dystopian for the government to give Pfizer billions. Well, let's say it's dystopian for Trump to give Pfizer billions. And then for Biden to mandate Americans to take his product, to prohibit, because of Fauci, Americans from suing you for harm. And yet refuse to let Americans see the data underlying its licensure. So we got Trump, Biden, Fauci. All three of them need to be in a Nuremberg trial in glass booths so we can watch them sweat. The lesson, yet again, is that civil and individual rights should never be contingent upon a medical procedure. The FDA has offered to prepare 12,000 pages of information for release by January this year, next year, 2022. Thereafter, the federal bureaucracy will only commit to releasing documents at the rate of 500 pages per month. Think about this. Well, for the next month, we can give you 12,000 pages. But then after that, for the next 75 years, we can only do 500 pages a month. Why are we putting up with these people? You know, that's what January the 6th should have been. It should have been a massive rally to stop that. Instead, it was a massive rally to protect the guy who gave billions to Pfizer to do this to you, who gave tens of billions to Pfizer and these other companies, and who gave trillions to governors, Democrat and Republican, and to hospitals to financially incentivize all of these crimes. And he also gave them a color of law order. So the federal government mandating that millions of people be injected with a liability-free vaccine requires complete government transparency, not the government suppression of that information. Well, let me just show you. When you get this information, they're going to give 12,000 pages the first month, but then after that, we can only produce 5,000 pages a month. And you know what it's going to look like? Remember when I showed you the people who were angry in the European Union? They weren't asking for the data that was used to show that this was safe, right? And let's review again what they're asking for. They're not asking for their formula. You know, you have some people on the left who are saying, well, they believe in this vaccine as much as Trump does on the left. And they're saying, we need to get this life-saving vaccine to everybody. And you're holding it up because of money. And we need to penetrate that veil and give this to everybody. And so they do want to have the trade secrets, those people do, because they want to get it out to as many people. They believe in it. But we're talking about, in this particular lawsuit, what they want to see is information about the safety, information about the efficacy, what they did to test it, and they want to see the adverse reaction reports from those tests, presuming that they did it, right? And that can't be seen. Now, in the European Union, they said, well, we want to see information about what kind of a contract you had with the government. What kind of liability protection did you demand from the government? Because we had already had, at the beginning of 2021, Stat News reported how they were blackmailing countries in Latin America. And they did the same thing everywhere. They did it in Europe. And so these European members of the European Parliament held a press conference because they finally got a hold of some of these documents. And this is what it's going to look like when we get these documents that have been redacted by the Justice Department.
Were you properly informed about what is going on? Because we had a lot of debates at the beginning of this year in the Parliament where we demanded full access to the contracts signed between these companies that produce the vaccines and the European Union. So these are the contracts that were disclosed by the Commission with the approval of the company. This is unheard of. And I will just show you the pages. These are the pages.
All blacked out.
Transparency is there. So this is the everything fundamental principle, out. Right, of democracy. I'm asking you guys, is this transparency? Do you see anything? Because we don't.
Yep, everything blacked out. Because the federal government is literally mandating millions of citizens, including the military, all federal employees, all employees of businesses with over 100 employees, to either get vaccinated or to be tested up to twice weekly, some transparency regarding the vaccination should be expected, but it's not. As a matter of fact, when we look at what Biden is doing and what is he going to do in terms of putting somebody in charge of this crooked, corrupt, fraudulent drug administration, the FDA, his nominee expanded abortion pill use in 2016. He has been a deputy commissioner of the FDA. Going back to 2015, he was appointed deputy commissioner in the Biden administration. Now, in the Obama administration. Now in the Biden administration, they want to make him top dog. Top dog. Now, is this any different from Trump? Of course not. After Trump met with RFK Jr. in the transition period in December, RFK Jr. said there was a tremendous amount of pushback and then a tremendous amount of money given to the Trump transition team. And lo and behold, he never got a chance to talk to Trump again, but Trump appointed Alex Azar, who was head of Eli Lilly, a big pharmaceutical company, which has been one of the biggest lobbyists prior to all this COVID vaccine stuff. Eli Lilly has been one of the biggest lobbyists and successful lobbyists and the federal government. And so their CEO was made by Trump to be the head of HHS. And then in the FDA, his commissioners were Gottlieb, who after he left went to work for Pfizer, and Hahn, who after he left went to work for Moderna. And so Biden is keeping up this tradition of corruption that we saw in the Trump administration as well. Biden's nominee to lead the FDA expanded the use of the abortion pill Mifeprix, or what? They make these things up. I have no idea how they... Mifeprex. He's been paid a consultant fee from dozens of pharmaceutical companies, including Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, and AstraZeneca. The White House statement signals that this guy, whose name is Califf, will be involved in approving more COVID vaccines and potentially other COVID treatments. Biden went on to say, as the FDA considers many consequential decisions around vaccine approvals and more, it is mission critical that we have a steady, independent, Well, he's independent of the rule of law. He's independent of ethics, just like the rest of these people. But he's not independent of big pharmaceutical that he's supposed to be representing. He is. It's going to be regulatory capture all over again. Yeah, an independent hand to guide the FDA. This is not his first rodeo. He's been a professor of cardiology at Duke University. Oh, that might come in handy to explain away what is being done by these vaccines. He was previously appointed deputy commissioner, as I said, in 2015. 8 months later, he was nominated to lead the FDA by President Obama. But as part of the confirmation hearings, a lot of his connections came up to big pharmaceutical companies. You know, if you want to turn, if you want to take the office of the comptroller of the currency and you want to completely put it under the entire economy under the control of central planners and the Federal Reserve, you put a Marxist in there. And so now you're going to put all the health care squarely under the control of this guy, Senator Joe Manchin. Says Dr. Califf's nomination has significant ties to the pharmaceutical industry take us backwards, not forwards. His current profile, and this is interesting, they have a website called ProPublic Dollars for Docs. And what it looks at is who's getting paid by the drug companies over the years. Previously, writes, and this is LifeSite News, yeah. Previously, Dollars for Docs noted that he got about $87,500 from Johnson & Johnson in 2012, but now that's been scrubbed. Along with what else? 2 months after his 2016 confirmation hearing, he unexpectedly loosened restrictions on the abortion drug that I previously attempted to pronounce. By the way, there is a new documentary on the PCR test. It's called... The PCR Test Deception. And, of course, it was immediately banned on YouTube. If you look up that title, you'll see it on BitChute. It's on the Vaccine Impact BitChute channel. Again, the title is The PCR Test Deception. The person who put it together said it was self-funded, but it's he's not charging for it because he considers this information to be so important. RFK Jr., characterizes what is happening as the final battle. Talking about Fauci's record of pushing vaccines at the expense of health. You know, Fauci, as RFK Jr. points out, Fauci controls a $6.1 billion budget. And then he gets another $1.7 billion that comes from the military to do bioweapons research. Okay. So he's got about a quarter of his budget is directly targeted to bioweapons. But think about that. That's a lot of money. Just under $8 billion. $7.7 billion. And Fauci is the highest paid federal employee. Higher paid than the president. That's why, you know, both Trump and Biden can say, that's above my pay grade. You'll have to ask the Fauci, right? But I pointed out the other day about how much power has been handed over to Buttigieg. Buttigieg, in his position, has been given $200 billion to hand out to whoever he wishes. Think about that. Think about the enormous political power. And see, this is why I keep going back to that executive order on March the 13th. What Trump did was he gave tens of billions of dollars to governors. In most cases, it was several times what the entire state budget was, and it was all at that governor's discretionary allocation. He could give it to whoever he wished. And that is what's happened with Buttigieg, except he's been given, one person, $200 billion to spend. And so he's got politicians all over the country courting him, trying to get that money. Fauci has only got about $8 billion. It's chump change compared to what they gave Booty. That's what I'm saying. Booty Gay is being groomed. Booty Gay was the guy that Elon Musk and these people in Silicon Valley, the technocrats who want to kill us and control us, he was their top guy. Fauci's NIAID conducted barbaric illegal drug experiments on foster children. At least 85 of them died as a result, and many more are still happening in war today. We're going to talk in the third hour to a very good researcher who is looking at what is happening in Canada. A lot of this dirty research, as people started to discover it, as there were bans put against it during the Trump administration, they left the country. Same way that when you had, back in the Obama administration, you had a people pull back because of a lot of bad publicity, a lot of accidents that had happened in these labs. And people were looking at this gain of function and saying nothing good can come out of this. Only bad things can come out of this. And so they temporarily stopped the funding of that. And that's when Francis Collins and Fauci started sending this to China. And in some cases, they just continued anyway. And they said, no, we don't care. We're going to continue to do it. They just defied the orders. But now, these people in China, who also, by the way, they're being given money from the U.S. government, from the Canadian government, and from the Chinese government as well to do these transhumanist experiments. We'll talk about that in the third hour. As I point out, you look at the history of this, and I haven't really talked about it, but I think it is interesting that going back to the year 1913, that was when the Federal Reserve was created, but it was also when the Rockefeller Foundation was created. And with a lot of money that he had gotten, he got even more money as they tried to break the monopoly of Standard Oil. And he got even richer. And so they created the Rockefeller Foundation in partnership with Andrew Carnegie and with Abraham Flexner, considered to be an educator. They set out to centralize all U.S. medical schooling. They oriented it to the germ theory of disease. This says that that all disease comes from germs. And you've got to have pharmaceuticals, toxic drugs, to target and to kill those germs. He financed a campaign to consolidate mainstream media to adopt the philosophies of growing pharmaceutical industry and to shutter its competition, which is now we're seeing a boosting stage where this is happening. Anybody who has any concern whatsoever about the actual health of patients is being kicked out. Rockefeller's crusade caused the closure of more than half of U.S. medical schools. It fostered public and press scorn for homeopathy, osteopathy, chiropractic, nutritional, and holistic medicines. And they jailed many practicing physicians. That's the type of thing that's happening now. You see, what they did there in terms of their allopathic model, getting rid of anything that had to do with nutrition, not focusing on wellness, but focusing on attacking germs and, intervention after people are sick, and criminalizing and denigrating everything else. They're doing that now in terms of establishing vaccines preeminent over all things. In 1984, when Fauci was appointed head of the NIAID, as RFK Jr. has pointed out, 11.8% of Americans had chronic disease. Today, 54% are. He also pointed out in his book, it's not in this article, that if you're born after 1983, you have an 85% chance of having food allergies. Just a coincidence, I'm sure. But, 54% of the people are now suffering from chronic illness. It was back in 2015 or 2016. I can't remember which year it was. I referred to the article many times. It was really kind of breathtaking in its candor. You know, many times these people avoid talking about what they're actually doing. Sometimes they just brag about it, like supervillains in a Bond film or a superhero film. And this is one of those cases. You had Goldman Sachs talking about Gilead, the people that Fauci has worked with so many times. And they had come up with a cure for a strain of hepatitis. And Goldman Sachs was, and it was a financial publication, Goldman Sachs was criticizing them and lecturing the rest of the pharmaceutical industry and said, we don't want to do this. Our business model is not to cure people. Our business model is to keep treating a chronic disease. Again, today, after Fauci has been there since 1984, when he went in, it was just under 12% of Americans had chronic disease. Today, 54% have chronic disease. And so what Goldman Sachs was telling the pharmaceutical industry, and Gilead in particular, they used them as a test case. They said they cured this strain of hepatitis. But the first year, they made $12 billion. And it was good. Then the next year, it started falling off very rapidly. And now they're only making $1 or $2 billion a year off of this. We don't want that as a business model. We don't want cures, they said. We want things that are going to make people a little bit better, but really not attack the disease. According to RFK Jr., between 2009 and 2016, 240 new drug products were approved by the FDA, and all of them came from Fauci. He goes on to talk about the CIA's involvement. He said after the 2001 CIA anthrax attacks, he didn't call it the CIA anthrax attacks. I call it the CIA anthrax attacks. If you go back and you look at this shoddy investigation that was done by the FBI, New York Times, Washington Post, both called it out as fraudulent. I've talked to the people with the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Truth. They went back and looked at that because it was all tied together with 9/11. This is the second shoe to drop. It took 20 years for the second shoe to drop, but it was all part of the package. And this particular type of anthrax, you trace it, and there's only two places in the world where it could have come from. Both of them controlled testing and lab facilities, both of them controlled by the CIA. So what RFK Jr. says, after the 2001 anthrax attacks, the CIA began pouring money into bioweapons research. And see, I think the anthrax attacks was a CIA operation in the first place, as I just said. The Pentagon was nervous about conducting such studies because it was prohibited. So they funneled money to Fauci to do it. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about in the third hour. That type of thing that is going, not that particular case, but something new. Same MO. These people do the same thing over and over again because they keep getting away with it. It works. Fauci was giving them millions and millions of dollars, said RFK Jr., but the biggest contributor was the CIA and the Pentagon through DARPA. The three of them were all working in tandem, and they were also teaching the Chinese how to weaponize viruses. So what do we do about this? You know, it's good to see Dr. Zelenko. Vladimir Zelenko, you know, he was here at the very beginning. He also, I talked about this other doctor who had a protocol. Zelenko did as well. The interesting thing about that was that although this doctor didn't get any flack from the hospitals until they had remdesivir that they wanted to push, they immediately came after Zelenko. And he talks about this, LifeSite News interviews him. He's an Orthodox Jew. LifeSite News is a Catholic site. But they talk about what underlies a lot of this is his belief in God and his belief that the people who are doing this to us think that they are God. Right? And I've said that many times. You know, you're taught by the media to fear people who say they believe in God. Yeah, you know, we have all the different Hollywood stuff like Elmer Gantry. Oh, be afraid of these people. They're just a bunch of hucksters and so forth. Now, let me tell you, the people that you need to fear, and there are people out there who shear the sheep. That's absolutely true. You're going to have wolves among the sheep. You always will. And you're certainly going to have wolves in politics. And you need to be careful about these people who want absolute power. They see themselves as God. That's why the Marxists, the socialists, these progressives, whenever they get power, they come after religion, every religion. And that is what's happening with the LGBT mob as well. He said when he was talking to Dr. Peter Bregan, who is somebody who isn't really focused on that. He's a secular host. Zelenko said history itself is marked with a struggle between people trying to live a God-conscious or God-centered life and others who have always attempted to be God-like, wanting to have global control over the rest of humanity. He said, we're made in God's image. That's the basis of natural law. That's right. That's the understanding that you see expressed in the Declaration of Independence. He said, meaning that since we're in God's image, our lives have sanctity just because we're created in the image of God. He said, in contrast, those who strive to control the rest of humanity and to be God-like can only really do that by enslaving them psychologically. And that's what we're living through right now, he said. Perhaps the biggest psychological operation in the history of humanity. This psyop, he said, has been extremely well orchestrated, brilliantly executed, and exceptionally evil. And it goes back again to the anthrax attacks, to Dark Winter 2 months before that, to the state model legislation that was sent out 2 months after that, all tied together. And they practiced it for the last 20 years. Zelenko, they say, was a former atheist. He said he used to enjoy talking people out of believing in God. He said, but when this happened, I was praying for some guidance. The next thing I know, a letter is sent to me in an email explaining how zinc ionophores and zinc work to inhibit RNA viruses, theoretically. And so he said, that was a big illumination for me. It really affected the world because I pushed that stuff globally. See, when they tried to shut him down, even the small town where he was, which was an Orthodox Jewish town, almost all Orthodox Jews in that town, and the small town council attacked him, the media attacked him, and it was a Streisand effect. You know, because of their attacking him, it went global. In August, he announced that after an earlier remission of a particularly severe form of cancer, he had suffered a recurrence and was possibly facing open-heart surgery and radiation treatments, with a real possibility of death before him. According to the co-founder and managing director of LifeSite News, he said, as a result, Dr. Zelenko, having this serious form of cancer, he's not held back at all. So he knows that he's got a limited amount of time on Earth. That's the good thing about that. And, you know, there was an article about millennials saying they're so afraid of what's happening has raised their awareness of death, and they're doing wills. Well, that's good. I don't know. Maybe there's some millennials out there who have some assets or dependents. I don't know. They don't seem to be getting married, and they don't seem to have any assets. But that's really what a will is for. But if you have an awareness of death, if you, you know, teach us, Lord, to number our days and to understand that we have a very limited amount of time here, and that at the end of that time, we're going to be confronted by God, and we're going to have to answer for what we have done in this life. And what are you going to do? I mean, are we going to become better and better people? None of us can become that good. You know, Christ died in our place, took away our penalty, and gave us his righteousness. That's the Christian message. I would hate to have to stand before God and plead my righteousness. It isn't going to work for anybody, frankly. Nobody's going to make that. There's no one who's that good. Some of the things he said, this is Hitler and Stalin on steroids. It is World War III. It is child sacrifice. It is totalitarian enslavement. He's right about every bit of that. He said in 2014, a document issued by the World Health Organization attempted to legitimize the idea that parents imply consent for their child to receive vaccinations in school by sending them to school on the days when the vaccines will be administered. If you listen to my program, you know that I have mentioned over and over and over again the doctrine of in loco parentis, where the schools and the judges and the legal system have this same idea and have had this idea going back into the 1980s. I played for you the beginning of a video that I did about 10 or more years ago. And it was before I went to InfoWars. And it began with identification papers. And it is pretty amazing how close it is to what is actually happening today. You know, you're not going to go anywhere. Constant surveillance. We're going to have identity papers. Showed the clip from The Great Escape. I had somebody ask me if I put that up on a video separately. I will. I'll put that up on the video channels separately. But the second part of that I cut off, I talked about schools. And I specifically talked about the fact that when you drop your kid off at school, they say, now you have abandoned them to the state. That's what a judge in Massachusetts said. He said it about sex education for an eight-year-old. The father did not want that done. It was normal heterosexual sex, but it was age inappropriate for that child. And he wanted to get the child out of the class. They refused to take the child out of the class. He dropped them off that day, but then went there to pick the kid up so he wouldn't go through that class, or she, I can't remember if it was a boy or girl. And they arrested the father. And the judge said, when you drop your kid off of the school, you have abandoned them to the state. We have a doctrine called in loco parentis. And now, guess what? 2014, same thing. And this is something that's been going on for a long time. It's been coming from the UN. The whole idea of children's rights put up against parental rights. That's what this is about. And so now they're saying, you drop your kid off on the days that we decide that we're going to give them vaccines. Well, you're consenting to that. You're abandoning them to the state. You're putting the state in as their parents. That's the real point. So Dr. Zelenko, I'll just give you one last quote from him. He said, don't live in fear. Don't live in isolation. Don't take the poison death shot. Take preventative therapy for COVID. Take early treatment if necessary. But more importantly, live with a consciousness about God. When enough individuals improve themselves, society as a whole improves, and we will move away from paganism, idolatry, and child sacrifice towards a world of truth, love, and the revelation of God. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. I would just say, though, that you are not going to you're not going to improve yourself. That's going to be a work of, you can do everything that you can, but there's not going to be anyone who is going to be self-righteous. But if we have from God a revival, and that's why I see a lot of people, you know, say we need to have, you know, we need to pray for a national revival. No, we need to pray for revival of individuals. It's got to be an individual by individual thing. It could be a mass movement by God to change what people want. But it's going to be done individual by individual. And that is really the only hope that we have. Because only then will we have, as George Washington said, a society that can maintain justice. If we have a society that is focused strictly on what can I get away with, how much money can I make, then we're going to have hospitals that are killing patients for money. It's just that simple. And I've seen enough of that. The only thing that's going to stop that is if people don't make money a god, because that love of money is the root of all evil. We'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, I've got some interesting news, political news, about Hillary, about Dan Crenshaw, and about Supreme Court cases and about the mandates. Before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit about the New World Orders that are going to institute the New World Order. We have orders. Well, are you going to follow these orders? Well, I hope not. Do not comply with them. We have Bill Gates, who is now saying, making his pronouncements and telling us what he is going to. It's funny, you know, here's one of these people who thinks that he's God. And he has so much power that he's been given by the prince of this earth that he can make these types of pronouncements and then he can spend the money on it to make them come true. So what does he see in the future for us? As Zero Hedge points out, the acute phase of the pandemic will finally end in 2022, says Bill Gates. Now that millions of people are beginning to question all the FUD surrounding the Omicron variant, right, Zero Hedge, you know what that is. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. FUD. So as they're questioning all the FUD, Bill Gates, the world's de facto vaccine czar, admired by everyone, that is, until his reputation was sullied by the scandal around his divorce, is reemerging to try again to convince as many people as possible to get vaccinated, you know, because he's got an agenda. He says it's an agenda. He's got a website. He's got an organization. He pays people to push an agenda. He calls it IA2030. The Immunization Agenda 2030. By 2030, he wants, as the slogan is, everyone, everywhere, every age, vaccinated. And by that, he means with everything that he says you're supposed to be vaccinated with, whatever he arbitrarily decides. The Microsoft co-founder, writes Zero Hedge, said that 2021 didn't bring as much improvement in the COVID situation that he had hoped, with more COVID deaths this year than in 2020. The Delta variant, yeah, in other words, the vaccine, and challenges with the vaccine uptake, progress has been underwhelming, he said in a post that he put on his blog called The Year in Review. The year in the rearview mirror. The blame, of course, wait for it. Who do you think is to blame? Is it him? Is it Pfizer? Is it Fauci? Is it Trump? Is it Biden? No, it's you if you didn't get the vaccine. The blame lies with millions of people who didn't get vaccinated. I underestimated how tough it would be to convince people to take the vaccine and to continue to use masks. So, yeah, all you people out there with asthma, you know, mask up. Gates wrote that he expects the acute phase of the pandemic to finally come to an end in 2022 as the number of confirmed cases in the U.S. nears 50 million. He said there's, quote, no question that the Omicron variant is concerning. It's still pushing this. Unbelievable. What a fraud this whole Omicron thing has been, and predictable, too. They needed it, so they invented it. There's no question that the Omicron variant is concerning, but here's what we know. The world is better prepared to tackle potentially bad variants than at any other point in the pandemic so far, because we can just re-up your boosters. He said companies will see occasional outbreaks, but new drugs will be available that could take care of most cases, and hospitals will be able to handle the rest. This neatly segues into Gates' next topic, virus-related disinformation. While he blames the government for not acting as more effective censors. See, this guy is a despicable authoritarian. All these technocrats are. The government just needs to shut down more speech. So they have some culpability. You know those people who didn't bow the knee and bare the arm to my dictates? Yeah, they're bad. And so is the government for not censoring people. As a matter of fact, he's been working on that. Microsoft put together that coalition, and I'm surprised how little attention it's gotten. The Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity is what they call it. And that would be CCPA. Since that looks like the Chinese Communist Party, they called it C2PA. But when they're talking about content provenance, what they're talking about is being able to identify the creator of any content. And we're talking about whether it's an article or whether it's a meme or whether it's audio or whether it's video, it will be, it will get an ID. See, Bill Gates wants every person on Earth to have an ID, and he wants every person on Earth to have an ID that is tied to whatever they communicate, so he can purge that, so he can stop it. Once they do that, well, my program will be over. It won't be able to go anywhere. That's the whole point of this. And nobody's talking about this. It's just amazing to me. He's put together a coalition of government press, you know, the BBC, but you also got the New York Times, other people. They're going to be the fact checkers who will be triggering the censorship that he loves so much. But then he also put a coalition together with the people who make CPUs, Intel, ARM, other processors. And then there will be a coalition with the software content creators, people like Adobe, where you're going to create audio, video, and other companies that create pictures, you know, Photoshopping type of apps and that type of deal. So he wants more censorship. He wants regulation of social media companies, which are rivals of Microsoft, but mainly he just wants to have centralized control. As Zero Hedge points out, if Gates is so concerned about misinformation, he should probably start looking at his own statements, like when he admitted last month that vaccines don't suppress transmission of the virus. Well, you know, that actually was true. Canada's COVID jails have returned, and they're seemingly worse than ever. But let's talk about what's happening. You know, this Jacinda Ardern, one of the cockiest, most proud people I have seen anywhere. And now what is happening, and it happened, actually, went into effect December the 3rd. This is something that was sent to me by a listener. Going back to the 23rd, 24th of November, the New Zealand papers started talking about how Jacinda Ardern, this person who cannot contain her glee when she is talking, she just gets giddy. Oh, yes, that's exactly what it is. We're going to take everything away from everybody. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. She smiles about it. So she had a new regulation. Businesses would face fines of up to $15,000 for failing to enforce vaccine passes. And then they went on to say that other publications said, oh, and by the way, that is going to apply to churches as well. It'll apply to churches. This is what a New Zealand pastor had to say about that.
Kia ora, g'day, Cal here for Is It Just Me in New Zealand. As most of you know, I'm a pastor of a wee Baptist church here, and had some interesting news in the New Zealand Herald this morning that directly impacts me and other church leaders, according to the New Zealand Herald, that says churches are being caught by surprise by this new legislation from the government. All church leaders are supposed to have received the mRNA experimental jab by the 3rd of December. Otherwise, they face a $15,000 fine. Did you hear that? So now the government has really notched things up a level and saying that it will be illegal for church leaders to perform their roles as church leaders if they are unjabbed by December the 3rd, coming up in about a week's time. Otherwise, they receive a $15,000 fine. Well, I've got a message for Jacinda Ardern, Chris Hipkins, Ashley Bloomfield, Andrew Little, and any other of their cronies. Get your nose out of God's business. God has a message for them from his word that says, God is not mocked. I shall repay, says the Lord. So here they are again, pushing the envelope, shaking their fist at God, mocking God. And my boss, my employer, does not take that lightly. He is a jealous God. And when a government is so foolish and stupid to start really shaking their fist at God and coming after him personally and his people, his leadership, they need to think again. They need to pull their heads in and keep their nose out of God's business, because there is a judgment coming for them they won't escape. And if they want to bring that forward, well, just continue on doing what you're doing, Ardern. You're messing with God directly and his people. I'm not employed as an employee. I'm called as a man of God, as a pastor. For me, it's a vocation. It's who I am. It's not a job I clock in and out of. So you can take your mandate, you can take your legislation, and you can take a flying leap. There is a payday someday, it's coming. And these foolish people, these foolish leaders, keep heaping up to themselves judgment against the day. They don't remember. They forget that the one who controls the breath coming in and out of their mouth, the one who controls the beating of their heart, it's not them. It's the Creator. And he can pull that plug anytime he wants.
That's right. This is not his first encounter with these people either. His name is Pastor Carl Bromley. He recently confronted cops in Christ Church, and he invited them to arrest him. The cop told Bromley that they were there to educate him about COVID-19, quote-unquote. He said he was already well-educated. And he said being educated by police about state ideology is the mark of a totalitarian regime. Oh, that's perfect. This guy knows exactly what is happening. He knows exactly what's happening. Pastor Carl Bromley of the Life Connection Missionary Baptist Fellowship in Christ Church. And what they have done is they've had a $12,000 fine for companies that do not enforce vaccine passports. They've increased it from $12,000 now to $15,000. They have rules about how close people can get to each other, the size of the workspace, how many people can be in there. All of these things are violated by any kind of a church meeting. They call it a traffic light system because, you know, you got the red, yellow, and green. That's the same Chinese system that they've had. And so they want you to not only get jabbed yourself, but they want you to become a traffic cop. They want you to become an enforcer of their totalitarianism. And basically, he just told them, as you heard, you can take a flying leap. I'm not taking your vaccine, and I'm not going to be a cop, and I'm not going to kick people out of a church meeting because of what you had to say. And so then that brings us to this cocky person who is drunk with power, Jacinda Ardern.
Mine, so long as there's people who are eligible who haven't been vaccinated, we've got work to do. You know, I don't think I'll ever be satisfied so long as there's someone who's who is eligible and hasn't been. And that's why I've said this, there's not going to be an end point to this vaccination program. Once we're rolling out boosters now, so we've got another wave of people that we need to make sure that we're protecting again. So those who were vaccinated 6 months ago, we really need them to come back, or we need to go to them.
Yeah, there'll never be an end to it. There'll be another vaccine and another and another. Yeah, how many of these are we going to have? They said, well, you know, Fauci and the rest of them are saying, well, we've got to think about that. You know, it's already, you know, they're up to three. Pfizer wants three, so I guess we'll do three because that's what Pfizer says. You know, Pfizer says it, then Fauci says it, and then everybody has to do it. It's a Simon Says game. And Israel is going to four already. You know, they're leading in all of this stuff. So that's what's coming. It'll never be enough. There'll always be another vaccine that they're going to force you to take, and they will continue to escalate the penalties. They'll continue to go up on the money. They are continuing to build their prison camps. That's what this is all about. And yet you saw her, how giddy she is. Oh, I think there'll never be an end to this vaccination program. I'm just enjoying the power trip too much. She claims that she won't push vaccination for children, but protesters across the country are making her distrust of her promises, their distrust of her promises known, forcing her to cancel her appearances at vaccination centers. Her next PR project is going to be her marriage over Christmas to her spin doctor husband, Clark Gayford. The media will fall all over themselves as almost the equivalent of a royal wedding. It'll be a public relations coup that leaves a bitter taste in the mouths of many Kiwis who have been destroyed by lockdowns, fines, and now coerced vaccination. The right at common law to have informed consent for medical treatment is based on the law of trespass. In other words, you have the right to bodily integrity free from uninvited threats and assault from individuals or from the state. This is also recognized in the Nuremberg Code, but that is what they're doing in New Zealand. And one other person said, this is truly a sham. It is repugnant to make a law that will affect every New Zealander. To say that the legislation is significant is an understatement. It will potentially affect the lives of every New Zealander, both vaccinated and unvaccinated, along with the businesses, both small and large. And you see who has the integrity to stand up to it. People who take the long view, the people who understand that government is not God. Only God is God. Let's talk quickly before we get in our interview here. Let's talk a little bit about the mandates. But before we get to that, I want to just cover some general headline news. Biden has warned Putin that he will be tougher than Obama in order to protect Ukraine. Stop and think about this. Look at how our border is completely overrun. What is Biden fixated on? The Ukraine border. Why? Well, because he'd like to have a war. So everything to protect the Ukrainian border, including war. But he won't even do, he won't do the first thing to protect our border that is in total collapse, to the detriment of not only Americans, but even the people who are coming across that border, who are being trafficked, who are going through a very dangerous situation. And then we have Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton just doesn't seem to be able to get over losing, does she? I mean, she wandered around the woods for a while after it was done. She wrote a book, What Happened, right? And now she has, here we are, that was, 2016. And here we are, 5 years later, and she's done a video of herself reading her acceptance speech. One person said, it's kind of like televising your therapy session. Look at how this was covered, however, by MSNBC. Oh, they were all so supportive of her.
Where you sit down and you read what you call the would-be victory speech. Mm-hmm.
My fellow Americans, today you sent a message to the whole world.
I didn't, as you know, write a concession speech because even though we had a lot of bumps those last 10 days, I still thought, we could pull it out. So I worked on a speech that really was about my journey.
And saying, look at me, listen to me. Your daughter will grow up and become the president of the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, though, I sent a message to the whole world. It was what I was going to do. And the problem is Hillary didn't get that message. I think somebody must have messed with her email system or something like that. I don't know what happened. Isn't that pathetic? It really is sad. And you should pray for Hillary because, she's talked all of her life. She is anti-family. You don't want to have a family. You want the village to raise a child. It takes a village to raise a child, not a family. I don't like families. Those men, they're all just like Bill, Well, we're not all like Bill Clinton or Jeffrey Epstein or Donald Trump, all the people, your circle of friends, we're not like them. I mean, the Trump and Hillary are so close with each other. You look at Ivanka and Chelsea. I mean, they went to the same schools, they're pals. It strained their relationship, but they were able to maintain that friendship because they had that bond and those elitist boarding schools that they developed. Yeah, they're part of the same club, and you ain't in it. He's not a blue class billionaire. He's a Bill and Hillary class billionaire. That's who Trump is. He's just part of that whole crowd, Epstein and the rest of them. But, we should pray for her. Many prayers have been answered in the sense that, as I say in Fiddle on the Roof, that's the rabbi. Is there a prayer for the czar? Yes. God bless and keep the czar far away from us. And God did bless us by keeping Hillary far away from us. she is somebody who talked about not just it takes a village. She has really no family there. She got very, in context there. What she's mainly crying about is thinking back about her mother. And but it seems like she doesn't really have any, connection to her current family. She's very sentimental about her mother. Beyond that, she's the one who always talked about the politics of meaning. And when you look at her life and you look at her statements, you understand that the only thing that gives Hillary Clinton meaning in life is politics. And that's a really sad thing, isn't it? I mean, the government is everything. The government should raise your children. The government gives her meaning in life. There is no meaning to her life, if that's the case. It is really sad. And so I'm serious when I say you should pray for her. Wouldn't it be something if God moved in her life and turned her into a Christian? That would be really interesting. when she told everybody about her former life. And then as we move to the Republicans, we have Dan Crenshaw, who seems to be making his moves for a big political career. He has been dearly loved by Saturday Night Live and many others. He's put together movies of him as a superhero type of thing with his campaign. And now he has taken on the House Freedom Caucus. He called them grifters and performance artists while he sucked up to Adam Kinzinger. Pretty amazing. Listen to what he has to say.
Okay, real talk. Time to debunk some lies.
Oh, yeah.
On side this
real
time.
Talk.
So this one's
I'm
about
the, real talk.
The vaccine database that you keep hearing about. Like, that's what got voted on in Congress, and people are mad because some Republicans voted for it, some didn't.
Like him.
All right,
like
here's
him.
The truth on it. Every Republican up here, by the way, knows that that particular bill, which was Republican-led, actually makes it harder to track vaccine information on the individual level. It actually decreases the amount of money that was originally allocated these systems by the Biden administration. So let's back up. Let me tell you the full story. There are something called immunization information systems at every state. These have long existed. In the American Rescue Plan, passed entirely by Democrats, no Republicans voted for it, they added about $500 million to that system and told states to, quote, make them better, right? They didn't put any guardrails. They didn't put any details. They just said, make them better. Now, this worried Republicans because we're worried about these authoritarian blue state governors that indeed do want to track your data and do want to employ vaccine mandates and passports and the such. And so there was a Republican-led effort for this exact provision to decrease the funding for it and ensure that if states take that money, they have to make the data anonymous and only collect it at the population level so that you can't be tracked. So the Republicans
saying
about this bill, saying it's bad, it does the exact opposite of what they're saying. And they know that, but they also don't like explaining votes to you. That's the truth.
Oh, there's so many lies there. Where do I start? Well, first of all, if we go back to August of 2020, I showed you the CDC database. They wanted all that information and said, well, it's because we've got to contact you for the second follow-up thing. But then they had a field there that said, refused. I had Sheriff Hathaway say, you know, I'm getting this alarming stuff. He sent it to me and we talked about it when I had him on as a guest 2 or 3 weeks ago. And he said, you know, they're grabbing all this information on people. They're sending it to the CDC. What Dan Crenshaw is saying is that instead of giving them $500 million to do this, we're only giving them $400 million. Isn't that great? So that's the problem with the Republican Party in general, the fact that they're nothing but Democrat light. Instead of saying, we don't want to give them any money to collect this data, and we're going to support your privacy, they say, oh, okay, we'll do it, $400 million. And we won't let you put in the names. We'll let you do a geospatial metadata for people. They will then be able to identify the areas where they need to focus on, and they will drill down into that data. And by the way, if anybody is so naive to think that the federal government is willing to or even capable of protecting the data, take a look at how they have been hacked over and over and over again, exposing all the information of people who work for the Department of Defense, people who work for the federal government in general. That's been hacked over and over again. The CIA had Vault 7 hacked. Vault 7 was a program for them to mask themselves as anybody they wanted to. They could make it look like they could hack people and make it look like they were Russians or Chinese or North Koreans or anybody they wanted to look like. And so the CIA has been hacked. The Pentagon has been hacked. The federal government has, they've all been hacked over and over again. They can't protect your information. This is not about protecting your information. This is about an iterative process to get control of everything, as Fauci had said. And you should stop this. And you shouldn't give them $400 million. As for this being a Republican-led initiative, well, the uncomfortable facts for Dan Crenshaw are that 140 Republicans oppose this so-called Republican-led thing, and only 80, including him and Adam Kinzinger and people of that ilk, 80 voted for it, and 140 opposed it. It's not a Republican-led. What he's doing with this is he is trying to do damage control for having betrayed you and having betrayed the principles of limited government. He went on to say in a statement that he made the night before, he went into a lot of detail attacking the House Freedom Caucus, making some interesting statements, saying that, well, you have people like Matt Gaetz, and I would agree with him that I think he is a grifter and a poser. But he went through a whole list of everybody, Louis Gohmert, Ron Wright, you know, pretty much anybody he could think of with the House Freedom Caucus. And he said, you know, they didn't vote as much with Trump as Adam Kinzinger did. Well, you know why Adam Kinzinger was voting with Trump and why these guys were not? Because they were voting against spending increases. Trump was not doing anything to stop those spending increases. You may have noticed that he did, several trillion dollars last year. And some of these guys did not vote for that type of thing. Because they didn't. Thomas Massie is one. Well, you didn't vote for Trump, he says. People like Dan Crenshaw and Adam Kinzinger have absolutely no concern about the money that's being spent. And on that regard, they are in touch more so than the House Freedom Caucus with Trump. But I'm not going to necessarily defend the House Freedom Caucus. I mean, you got the guy who was head of it, Mark Meadows. He went to the Trump administration. Look what he did after he got there. Senate Republicans are poised to help Democrats raise the debt ceiling. See? There it is again. New American. This is the type of thing that was fought by the Freedom Caucus, but, you know, not by Trump. And so Dan Crenshaw says, well, you're not with Trump. Who cares who's with Trump? Is Trump with America? Is Trump with the Constitution? Is Trump with the Bill of Rights? No, no, no. He's not with the Second Amendment either. We have the bump stock ban that he pushed through. That was a big precedent. Just like the red flag gun laws. Just like removing medical and religious exemptions for vaccines over measles in 2019. Just like you said, take the gun and do the due process later. And the Democrats have been happy to do that at the state level. And then he came out, and for the first time ever, he did an executive order to ban something to do with firearms. And even more so, it was to ban an attachment that the ATF, even under Obama, never sought to regulate this attachment. So he goes to regulate an attachment and to do it by executive order. And so now, he was opposed on that by the Gun Owners of America. They filed suit. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals in March of this last year, 2021, ruled that bump stocks were not, in fact, machine guns. Once this was decided, the Gun Owners of America made the case that the bump stock does not meet the legal definition of a machine gun. The Sixth Circuit Court ruled in favor of Gun Owners of America and said that bump stocks are not, in fact, machine guns. And then what they did, and that was, you know, what they typically do with these circuit courts is they'll have, you know, a couple of judges that will rule on a case. And then some of the other judges can say, well, wait a minute. We don't like what happened with that. So they'll do what they call an en blanc session, a session where the entire court will review the case. And when they did that, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals had a tie vote, 8-8. That means that the bump stock by President Trump, the bump stock ban, stays in place. And so as this article from the MachineGunNest.com points out, this ruling is a double-edged sword for gun owners. The ban allows the ATF to prosecute a company called Rare Breed Firearms for their forced reset trigger, turning law-abiding gun owners into felons overnight. What they did was they, instead of the bump stock attachment being like a bouncy thing, they set up something in the trigger so that it doesn't reset the trigger. So as bouncing, as long as you keep pressure on the trigger, it will continue to fire. Not anything that I've ever been interested in. I mean, you look at the price and availability of ammunition now. Why would you want to dump all that stuff just for that? Is that fun? Is that fun? I don't, you know, to me, guns are not something that I do for fun, something that is a necessary protection against evil. So I'm not into just spewing in, you know, ammunition at a buck a piece. I don't have money to burn like that. And I would not see how that is any fun anyway, but If you want to know where all of this is, and if you want to know where Trump is, just consider the fact that this guy, David Chipman, who looked like Biff from Back to the Future, always had this look on his face. But he is somebody who was with the ATF, and after he left the ATF, he was working with gun control organizations. And so it got everybody very concerned and upset and worried when Biden wanted to make him head of the ATF. And he was so rabidly anti-gun everything that they withdrew his nomination. You know, it's kind of like what Biden did with Omarova, putting her, this Marxist, in charge of the currency, and she wanted to put herself and the Federal Reserve in charge of the entire economy. But David Chipman really likes this Trump bump stock ban. David Chipman said the danger posed by firearms that enable shooters to continue firing in this manner is the same reason that Congress chose to include machine guns in the National Firearms Act when it was originally enacted. And it allows people to shoot many bullets very quickly, but not very accurately. But he loves what Trump did. He loves what Trump did. They're on the same page. I don't know. Yeah. People just, well, who do you want to be president? You know what? I don't want even a president. I don't want a federal government. I think that institution has gotten so bad. The best thing we can do is try to cut it off with nullification as much as we can. The Supreme Court reviewing Roe v. Wade is, as one senator says, quote, an opportunity to finally modernize our laws. What is he talking about? And this is Senator Steve Daines of Montana. He said it's an opportunity to modernize America's abortion laws. I may be misreading this. I could not tell from this statement that he had whether or not he thinks that that the Supreme Court is going to, that Roe v. Wade is the law of the land, and the Supreme Court is going to modernize that law of the land, or if they're going to do what Kavanaugh kind of alluded to, which is to say we need to kick this back where it belongs in the states because the federal government doesn't have the authority to really enter into this and to set the parameters for when life begins. That's not our job. That belongs to the states. That was not under the 9th and 10th Amendment delegated to the states, therefore delegated by the states to the federal government. Therefore, the federal government in any branch, whether you're talking about Congress, or whether you're talking about the presidency, or you're talking about the Supreme Court, none of them have the authority to make that determination. That needs to be determined in the states. And so they point out that even the Washington Post has admitted back in 2017 that out of 198 countries and independent states and semi-autonomous regions, that we have, we're one of only a handful of states, Canada, China, Netherlands, North Korea, Singapore, the United States, and Vietnam, that allow elective abortions this late, past 20 weeks. And so the senator says, our nation has the opportunity to finally modernize our laws. We have the opportunity to catch up with great advances in science, technology, and medicine that indisputably show the humanity of unborn children. Our court's 9 justices have the opportunity to reconsider a wrongly decided case that has resulted in the death of 62 million innocent babies. They have the opportunity to reverse this horrific decision that imposed abortion on demand until the moment of birth across the United States. They have the opportunity to recognize that Roe was based on flawed, outdated science and that the right to abortion, which Roe invented, has no support in the text, history, or structure of the Constitution. So we shall see what happens with that. It is something that belongs at the state level, which, if he said that, it was not quoted in the article. Another warning flag about conservatives is this obsession with the Constitutional Convention. I've talked about this many times, and there's yet another article that came out yesterday on the Hill. Conservatives prepare a new push for a Constitutional Convention. Mark Levin has been a major pusher of this idea. And let me just say, and in this article from The Hill, they're talking about the American Legislative Exchange Council. Before I talk about the American Legislative Exchange Council, I will just say the problem that we have is really simple. The Constitution isn't flawed. It's the people who refuse to obey it. And how many ways and how many times have we seen the government in every branch thumb their nose at the Constitution, whether they're going to violate your bodily autonomy with a search by the TSA or take it to what is happening this year, trying to force inject you with something, taking away doctor-patient relationship and all these other things. The problem is that we have people who don't respect individual liberty and they don't respect the rule of law. They're acting under color of law. They're not obeying the Constitution that they have to swear to in order to have the authority to execute their office. Who is going to be running this constitutional convention? Those same people. So that's a fundamental flaw in this. We don't even need to talk about what's going to happen with this. Nobody knows what's going to happen with this. Constitutional convention was just an idea that was floated. There were no guidelines for it. There really isn't any way to control this, but I don't trust the people doing this. And so I think the best thing that we could do would be, if you want to improve the Constitution, make things clearer, add some amendments to it. That is a very clear process, and that keeps it focused on one issue at a time. The conservatives will tell you that we're going to have this and we're going to keep it to one issue and it's going to be a balanced budget amendment. And maybe we'll put in their term limits for members of Congress and so forth. So you think they're really going to do that? Do you think these people who have, that was when you had Newt Gingrich and his, in 1994, I think it was, 1994. So Clinton gets in 92. By 94, midterms, well, people are really hating what they see with Clinton. And so with that, and along with Newt Gingrich's, pledge, his 10-point pledge, contract with America is what he called it, they pretty much did everything except for term limits. They didn't even attempt to do term limits. They actually even got in a line item veto for the president, and Bill Clinton liked that idea. And so they did pass a line item veto for the president. You know how that got taken away? Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani didn't like that because that was going to mean that he was going to lose some of the pork and corruption that was coming to him from the federal government. So Rudy Giuliani took it to court and got that thrown out. But they never even attempted to do term limits. And I don't believe for a moment that they're going to have a balanced budget. By the way, the balanced budget is not even the core problem. The core problem is the Federal Reserve and the fiat currency. They don't even address the real problems. So when you look at the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, ALEC has been an organization that, as The Hill describes them, a conservative group that backs free markets and states' rights. Well, that's not really true. What they do at the American Legislative Exchange Council is they have conservatives take junkets to these retreats that they have. And while they're there, they give them model legislation for their states. Does that sound familiar? Remember I mentioned earlier the Model State Health Emergency Powers Act that came, they used the anthrax attack and 9/11 and the dark winter simulation, and they put out some model state legislation and said, here, enact this. Well, that's what the American Legislative Exchange Council does all the time. Going back to my experiences in North Carolina politics, there was a guy there who the Republicans had always been in the minority. And before 2010, where they got in the majority, the guy who had been there for a long time running as head of the minority in the House, Republican minority in the House, is a guy named Skip Stam. I knew Skip Stam. He was a Christian. He had great integrity. He was very conservative fiscally. And a lot of integrity. And he was a good guy. And so when they got the majority, what they did was they immediately skipped over him and they put a guy in who had only been in there for like one, maybe two terms, Tom Tillis. Tom Tillis, using the American Legislative Exchange Council's blueprint, started pushing in toll roads in North Carolina. And other things are big government stuff like that. That's not a conservative. Toll roads are not conservative. Toll roads are a globalist thing. And so, but he did the stuff that the American Legislative Exchange Commission did, ALEC. And so he was, after one or two terms of that, they got him to run for U.S. Senate. And that may be how you know his name. Tom Tillis is now in the federal government as a senator. But ALEC is one of those organizations. I do not trust what they do. They are not about limited government. And now ALEC is drafting legislation, not for toll roads. They're drafting legislation not for public health officials to act as dictators when an emergency is declared by the president. No, this is legislation that ALEC has drafted for a constitutional convention. The draft legislation mentions a balanced budget amendment, term limits. Others have issued calls for a constitutional convention meant to tackle limits on Congress's ability to levy taxes or gun control or rolling back the right to an abortion. So all of these things are things that could easily be fixed by the application of the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, by paying attention to what the Constitution actually says. If you want to talk about gun control, what's the Constitution say? You don't have any authority to do any of that. You can't even infringe on it. You can't even mess with the edges of this. So just like a fence, you're not going to infringe on somebody's property rights by gradually moving that thing in a little bit at a time. And that's what they have done, going back to the National Firearms Act and these other things. If you want to protect these fundamental rights, you have everything that you need there in the Bill of Rights. The problem is we don't have the people with the integrity to do that. Finally, before we go to break, I just want to say, you know, when you look at what Twitter is doing, I mentioned earlier how they came after the American Heart Association because it was information that was not portraying the vaccines in a positive light. And so everybody was carrying the story yesterday that Twitter banned Ghislaine Maxwell's trial tracker. There was a lot of outrage, and so by late yesterday afternoon, they un-nuked it, as Zero Hedge points out, and they brought that back. But they have also suspended the Pelosi portfolio tracker. Because if you really want to make money, you do the kind of inside stock trades that Nancy Pelosi is famous for, she and her husband. And this goes back, it was 60 Minutes that exposed it a long time ago, and she's still doing it. She's still doing it. But Twitter blocked the Ghislaine Maxwell trial tracker. They blocked the Pelosi portfolio tracker. And as Zero Hedge points out, you can say goodbye to virtually anything that reflects poorly on the left or their ideologies or the BLM riots or anything that's being done by big pharmaceutical companies, any criticism of climate change, all that whole agenda. I mean, this guy that has now taken over Twitter, that's what he is all about. I do need to get onto Telegram. I am on Gab, by the way. It's a David Knight Show on Gab. On Twitter, Libertarian. Since this guy's taken over, there has been a 90% drop in my engagement on Twitter. Pretty amazing. That has all escalated. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with our guest, and we're going to talk about what is happening with U.S., Canadian, Chinese, horrific experiments that are being done. The kind of cannibal medicine that I've talked about, the Soylent gene vaccines that are being created. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. And joining us now is Julianne Colaraffi, and you can find her on Twitter at Kind and True. And she also has a website, fetalindustry.com, where you can find her articles. She has done a wonderful job of research, putting together some very heinous pharmaceutical crimes, things that I call cannibal medicine, baby sacrifice, and the bioweapons involved in that. And of course, she did it by putting together financial relationships. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Thank you for joining us, Julianne.
Oh, thank you. Great honor to be here.
Well, thank you. It's a great honor to have you. And you've done a tremendous amount of work here. And I saw this before I went on vacation. You said on Twitter, I've sent emails, tweets, direct messages to every pro-life organization I can think of to inform them about the humanized mice atrocity that's going on in Saskatoon, Canada, but all in vain, not one response. Why aren't they all over this thing? I'm stunned. Talk a little bit about what you have seen in terms of the magnitude of abortions, for example, that are involved here, because they're harvesting these babies, and we've talked about this before, creating these humanized mice and the BLT sandwich that they were joking about. But talk about what this research is about and why they're doing it in Canada.
Well, this began, I traced this project, the ongoing project. I traced it from March of last year. The Rocky Mountain National Laboratory, the head of the Rocky Mountain National Laboratory, Kim Hassan-Krug, was very he was complaining that he couldn't make BLT mice, humanized mice with human lung patches. He was complaining that he couldn't do that because of the Trump ban on fetal research. So he said he would have been offered by a University of North Carolina researchers. He'd been offered three dozen mice that Ralph Baric had made in 2019. They were left over from his experiment, that experiment that we talked to you about the last time, about the BLT sandwich. Mm-hmm. They were from that project, from that study in 2019. I think it was done in February.
So let me interject here and tell everybody, Ralph Baric at UNC Chapel Hill, just down the street from where we used to live. And you know, he has been talked about quite a bit in connection to the gain-of-function research that Fauci was funding here and in China. And, you know, they continued to fund that research at UNC Chapel Hill, even though there was supposed to be a moratorium on it during the Obama administration because of all the accidents that had been had and because of the people who were in the industry said, we got to stop this gain-of-function stuff. So they did some of it in China, but they even kept it going at UNC Chapel Hill with Ralph Baric. He's right at the epicenter of this. So he was also involved in this Rocky Mountain lab in terms of helping the people that were working there, right?
Oh, yes. They have a very intimate connection, and they share research, you know, obviously, and researchers at the Rocky Mountain National Lab, one of them is Carrie Lavender, and she is a expert in BLT, making BLT mice. She's been doing it for several years, right, going back to 2000. three, I think. And she uses regularly uses the aborted baby fetal liver and thymus in her BLT mice projects. So she was very interested in this offer of the three dozen mice, Ralph Barrick's mice, but they couldn't use it at the Rocky Mountain National Lab because of Trump's ban. So she offered to take them to Canada. And that was the last I'd seen of that. That was like in early March 2020. And I tried to track her down. I wanted to see if she had actually gone to Canada. And I finally found an article from the University of Saskatchewan's website saying that she had, in August of 2020, that was like 5 months later after Kim Hassengrub had been complaining that he couldn't get his mice, she had been there for 5 months. It was an article saying how they had this project going in the University of Saskatchewan, making mice with lung patches. And so that really perked my interest. I said, oh, that must be the Ralph Barrick's lung-only mice, because Ralph Barrick had made two models. He'd made the lung-only mice, and he'd made the BLTL mice. So the lung-only mice only have the fetal lung patches on them from the aborted babies. And the BLT mice are implanted with liver and thymus, and then they have lung patches on them. So they're the deluxe model. The BLTL is the deluxe model. That's the one that they praise. You know, they say it's the ideal vaccine testing candidate. And that's
let me interject here, because I've talked about this. We talked about it when you were on before, and I've covered articles from John Rappaport. He did an excellent job of doing that. There's been other articles, I think, from LifeSite News, where they talk about how when they harvest lung and thymus and other organs from these babies, they have to do it by having the child born alive, even going back to the 1963 HEK cells that were used for testing and even manufacturing of a lot of these things. That had to be done not by injecting a poison that would destroy what they're trying to get. If they just rip the baby apart, as they're typically doing in many of these abortions, that would also be an issue. They have to get them at a certain age so the organs are mature enough. So they're taking later-term babies. They're scheduling this appointment. They're finding just the person that they're looking for. They schedule an appointment. They have to have this baby is the way the type of abortion that they use. It's virtually always born alive. And then they have to dissect the baby while it is alive to retrieve these organs. This is something that when you look at the connections to China, this is the kind of ethical connection that you get to China, because China is constantly doing that to adults in order to harvest organs for transplant and to make money off of that. If you don't respect the sanctity of life at the beginning, you're not going to respect it at the end or anywhere in the middle. And that's what's really the issue. Everybody should be threatened by this. This is not something, oh, well, you know, I'm not a fetus. I don't have to worry about that, and I'll take care of my babies. No, no, no. This kind of ethic is going to be coming for everybody, and it already is coming for everybody with this denial of doctor-patient relationship, the forced vaccines, and the rest of this stuff. But I just wanted to interject that, because when we talk about these organs that they're harvesting in order to create humanized mice, then we have to understand that they're cutting babies up when they're alive.
Yes, and what you said about scheduling the appointment, that what's very interesting about that is that in the province of Saskatchewan, they require a doctor's visit before the pregnant woman can get an abortion. And that's the only province in Canada where that's the case. They also have 17 abortion clinics in the town of Saskatoon, where the University of Saskatchewan is located, which I think is an inordinately large number for a town that's of 30,000.
Wow. So, wow. Only 30,000 people, and they got 17 abortion clinics. That's amazing.
Abortion clinic. And I wonder if that law is purposely, put in place so that the babies will be around 17. There's the optimal age is 17 to 20 weeks for BLT mice. So it seems like, you know, that might be, I don't know for sure, but that might be the reason why they have that law there. But I looked up the number of abortion clinics in Long Island, where I live. So on Long Island and Manhattan included, there's 15 abortion clinics for 8 million people. Wow. So that 17 abortion clinics in Saskatoon seems like a rather suspicious number.
Yeah.
but
about 500 to 1,000 times more, whatever it is. That's pretty crazy. And you know, the interesting thing is, I just saw a criticism of Saskatchewan's premier, who is Scott Moe. And they're talking about how, you know, he's kind of been an archetypical conservative politician, how somebody who is a liberal like Doug Ford would never be able to get away with a lot of the coronavirus things that he is doing there in Saskatchewan. And I think that is a hallmark, a pattern of what we've seen over and over again, to get somebody that is a trusted conservative. Oh, he would never do this or that. And then you can basically use them as cover, use them as a beard for what you couldn't get away with if you had somebody that everybody was keeping their eye on because they were suspecting he was going to do something like this. You get somebody that nobody would suspect he's going to do something like that. And that's how these guys, Jason Kenney, Scott Moe in Canada, these so-called conservatives can get away being a lot more authoritarian. And in this particular case, get away with having this many, 500,000 times per capita, the number of abortion clinics than you do in New York, in Long Island.
Well, the fact that all of this is going on in a little obscure town in Canada is kind of suspicious, too. I mean, sometimes I wonder if the Trump ban on fetal research was kind of a convenient cover too, so they could kind of move all that up to Canada, where nobody would be really looking for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And because we have a lot of three really important American scientists up there involved in this project. You have Carrie Lavender and Daryl Falzarano. They were he's up there too. They're both from Rocky Mountain National Labs. And then you have Angela Rasmussen, who recently moved up there. And she's a really big name in a big scientist in the federal government. You know, a lot of federal government connections with her. She's done projects for DARPA and DTRA, the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, and for the DHS. So she's up there. Why is she in Saskatoon? That was really, but then as I found out more and I did more research, her role really came clear. And I think I kind of understand now what they're up to, but it took a while.
So you got all these big name scientists performing a lot of things that people thought were ethically dodgy and even scientifically dodgy. And they go to this very, very small town in an area that is considered to be very, very conservative, and they can hide there. So what is it that you notice that they're doing? You talked about looking at some of the research and how many babies were being sacrificed. Talk a little bit about that, the magnitude of what they're doing in terms of these humanized mice and the magnitude of the number of babies that they're cannibalizing.
Yes. So Carrie Lavender, who's in charge of the BLTL mouse project, she did a podcast in August, and she was talking, she did a lot, talked about her project. And so she said in that interview that she has made at that time in August that she had made 150 mice, and that she had two batches of mice, 150 of them, but two batches had failed. So that is in a period of 5 months. So I believe she's made about 300, since there's like 150, and she had made four batches and she had made 300 in 5 months. So if you at that rate, she was making, I figured she's making about 60 mice a month. And that's, and then the rate ratio of babies to mice, I think, is two mice to one baby. Because I can't, you know, it's hard to figure out, but I think that's what it is. I think it's the rate. That's what I've seen in other studies, that it's like two mice per baby.
Wow.
So that's one mouse, one baby per day that's being sacrificed to make these mice.
Wow. Wow. In a small town of about 30,000 people. But of course, they have 17 abortion clinics or something like that. That's absolutely astounding, the magnitude of it, especially the fact that it's in a small town like that.
Right. So if they kept going at that rate, and I believe they have been, because she said they were in great, her mice have been in great demand. She says she's the only one in the world who can make them. And she had people, important people from all over the world calling her and asking her, oh, please, please make these mice for us. So she said they have a huge waiting list of people that, of researchers that want the mice. So she said the demand is very high. So I'm sure she's kept it up all along. She said 150 mice won't go very far. So, you know, it sounds like it's an ongoing project. And if so, from the time they started, which was April 2020 to now, they've probably made, I estimate, about 1,260 mice, which wow. is probably about 600 babies that have been sacrificed so far.
Wow. And this includes a lot of these, you know, big, as you pointed out, you know, you got DARPA, you got DHS and the U.S. agencies, and then you have the Canadian government and you have the Chinese government that involved in all of this, right?
Yes. And it's also, it's part, what I found out recently is that it's part of a huge Canadian project called COVAR, which is... which encompasses like 100 different projects, and this is one of the projects. And Angela Rasmussen is in the team leader for Pillar 2, and her job is to study host and pathogen interactions. So she and that was her job with the DARPA and the DTRA was to study the transmission of emerging variants of diseases, deadly diseases, to humans, because they believe, you know, that wild animal populations and animal populations, even cats, you know, and dogs and domestic animals, are a reservoir for diseases that mutate in the animal population and then are transmitted to humans. So now they're focused on the emerging variants like the Omicron, and they're saying that the animal populations are a threat to their existing vaccines, and so they need to make a pan coronavirus vaccine which will cover all those emerging variants and be like the magical booster shot, you know, that you will save you. But it sounds like they're also also working on a vaccine for wildlife too. So
they're pushing this narrative that, you know, it's at the wet market, you know, people are eating bat soup, and that's really what this is about. When in reality, what we have to worry about is leaks out of these radical gain-of-function programs where they're messing with things at a very fundamental level, and whether or not they even understand what they're doing, then it gets to another aspect of this. Whether what they're trying to do is even a good thing. So they're saying, in terms of talking about this, that they're kind of working on a universal COVID vaccine, because we know they've talked about a universal flu vaccine. So now we can roll in COVID and get everybody to take this universal vaccine, since a lot of people didn't want to take the flu shot. So now we can have this universal vaccine. That's their stated purpose, right?
Yes, that's what they're working on. That's the program that... Carrie Lavender and her teammate, Daryl Falzerano, who works at Vito Intervac, which is also located on the campus of University of Saskatchewan. Vito Intervac is a international vaccine research center, and its main main work was animal vaccines, but now they're working on human vaccines. And Daryl Falzerano, who was also trained at Rocky Mountain National Labs in Montana with Carrie Lavender. And he's also worked with Angela Rasmussen on several different scientific studies. He's the inventor of MERS vaccine for camels, because he said it's much more efficient to vaccinate camels than to vaccinate humans. So that's his big claim to fame. And so now he's working with Carrie. She sends the mice across the campus to him, and he injects the SARS-CoV-2 virus into the human lung patches on the mice. Wow. So that's how they work. That's what their job is.
Wow.
So they're both NIH trained scientists. And Carrie Lavender referred to them as a dream team. And she said they're doing exactly what NIH prepared them to do. And she's so happy about that. So that's kind of a strange, I mean, a provocative statement, you know, that this is what the NIH trained them to do.
Well, I've had dreams about this kind of stuff, except I call them nightmares. what the NIH is doing is absolutely criminal. And again, it's not just Fauci. People need to understand it's the NIH. I call them the Nazi Institutes of Health because they've picked up where Mengele and these other people left off. They brought them over here with Operation Paperclip. They have the same, quote-unquote, ethics that these people did. Very sinister what they're doing and doing, continuing to do, regardless of whether they are prohibited by politicians, regardless of whether, you know, they continue this type of research after there was a lot of exposure of the accidents and restrictions put on them by Congress, by the Obama administration. And then they did exactly what they're doing with this, and that is skipping to another area. So then it came back with Trump, and there's other restrictions on this humanized mice stuff. So they go to Canada, to a foreign country, in order to continue this. And there is no stopping these people. They have unlimited amounts of money, and they are going to continue to fund this out of DARPA and these other things. I just want people to understand that when they come to you with this next universal flu and COVID vaccine, this is going to be the product of them aborting babies live vivisection of these babies, creating transhumanized mice to test them on. And that's what I've been saying. That is, in a sense, you know, the people say, oh, you know, those 1963 fetal cell lines, that's ancient history. No, this is even newer, and it's current and ongoing. And people need to understand when this thing hits exactly what is behind it. When you look at this, Julianne, talk a little bit about how the money is involved here and the funding from all these different governments.
Oh, well, I just wanted to interject one little thing. When you said that, when you talk about the universal vaccine, it's almost like that is the master plan. I mean, like yes. The other vaccines are just a little prelude to that. And this is the main game because, as they say, and I was listening to the director of Vito Intervac, and he was saying, oh, you know, the other vaccines, they don't work. So we know now that they don't work. So we're going to have to do something more, you know. So they admit that, they openly admit. And then they say the animals are a big threat too, you know, because incubating all these horrible invariants, you know, in the animal population. So the only thing that will save us is the pan-coronavirus vaccine. So you can already see the rhetoric ramping up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And as they carefully admit that things have failed, they say, well, that means that we're just going to have the next product, and they've been planning this for a long time. Actually, before we get into the money, it made me think about this as well. I want to ask you, in terms of the mechanism of the way these things are supposedly going to work, is there any information about that yet? Is this focusing on some kind of a genetic modification like the mRNA vaccines? What if anything, do you know about that?
Yes, I heard the director, Volker Gertz, I think his name, is at Vito Intervac speaking about the coronavirus vaccine that they're working on. And he said something that's based on protein-based. And he kept saying, oh, it's very safe. You know, it's very, very safe, you know. So I'm not sure about the details, but he said it was something about protein-based and that it was very, very safe. And yeah. Very effective.
Yeah, there. Yeah. We expect it to probably be the same thing. And there's one other thing here I just noticed in this article I wanted to get to. Talk about the fact that Carrie Lavender referred to these as her little babies. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, yes. In her podcast, her podcast was recorded in the backyard of the interviewer, I guess because of COVID, you know, they had to sit in the backyard outside. And they were just talking and laughing and talking about the little mice and how cute they were. And Carrie Lavender said, you know, that she referred to them as my little babies. And she said they're so cute with their little lung patches, human lung patches. They look like water wings or shoulder pads or whatever. And then she said they even look like they're sprouting wings, you know. So, wow. And so they were all giggling about that. And so it kind of shows the callous disregard. I don't even, you know, do they even know what they're talking about? You know, it's like, yeah. And then at that point, she never mentioned the liver and the thymus either, you know, implanting that. But and Carrie Lavender was she's very proud of her mice. These are her special brand of mice that she developed. They're called the triple knockout BLT mice strain that she developed for BLT mice. They're black with pink ears and a tail.
So, and wings that are babies' lungs. Let me ask you this. I mean, are those, is that just lung tissue? How, I know that they're putting, you know, human tissue in these mice for the purpose of testing it. I mean, none of these organs are the lungs are not actually functioning, right? It's just tissue that's there, right?
Yes, that's so they can grow the infection in there. And at Vito Intervac, Daryl Falzerano, he says that they have isolated the SARS-CoV-2 virus from a clinical sample, which is, you know, news to a lot of people because nobody's ever, you know, we don't really hear about that very often.
That's the big controversy. They keep saying we don't have an isolated version of this, but they do say they've got it in Saskatoon.
Somehow he has it. I don't know how he has it, but he has it. Maybe it came from Ralph Barrick's mice, you know, that they brought up there. I don't know, because those mice were from the University of North Carolina. So maybe that's where they got the virus. I don't know. But and they also, I can't remember what I was going to say.
Well, there's a picture that you've got in some of your articles of one of these camels that they're messing with. Because diseased camels are definitely a threat throughout the United States and Canada and probably China as well. And that's really where the money is coming from, right? And that's kind of how you found this in many regards is, following the money, because there's so much money that is floating around. Talk a little bit about, some of the funding that's behind this, especially out of China and Guangzhou and other places.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's another interesting subject. Angela Rasmussen, who's a very interesting character, her boss at Columbia University is Dr. Ian Lipkin, and he has been awarded by the government of China at least three times, received medals from them for his great work with, when the SARS epidemic occurred in China, he went to China and he helped strengthen their public health system. And he helped, and he got a medal in January of this year from the Chinese government for instituting a bunch of different hospitals. And one of them was the Guangzhou Institute of Biomedicine. And their department, the Guangzhou Institute Department of Respiratory Health, is connected to Vito Intervac. They have a mutual agreement that they collaborated on a vaccine. I can't remember what kind it was of something a couple years ago. And they are listed on Vito Intervac's website as a contributor along with the South China Vaccine Institute. So they're a big funder of Vito Intervac. And also
sounds like the Corleone family, Vito. Except that's a dirty business and he wouldn't get into that. I mean, they only do gambling. They don't kill kids, so that Vito wouldn't do it. I'm sorry.
They have a lot of other connections too. The Beijing Institute of Technology is a flagship partner. They call it a flagship partner of the University of Saskatchewan, which means that they are big funding, big contributor to the University of Saskatchewan, and they've given them medals and everything and awards. And it started a Confucius Institute. Have you ever heard of one of those?
Oh yeah, it's
Confucius Institute. Very controversial.
They've been doing that at a lot of different universities around North America. Yeah, it truly is amazing the amount of money, and China is the natural partner for this because with the communist in charge, they have, as I said before, they've been doing organ harvesting from prisoners. That's very well documented by many people, and so they have no moral compunctions about doing any of this stuff. And it truly is a dirty business. You know, Julianne, when we look at this, I think about in law, you have a situation where if somebody has obtained evidence in an illegal way, that's inadmissible because they say it is the fruit of a poisonous tree, right? And we have a situation with these medicines that these medicines are the fruit of a poisonous tree. A poisonous tree where they will use and kill humans in order to obtain this. And here in America, we don't do it to prisoners yet. But what we can do is we can do this to unborn babies. And for the time being, they seem to be able to get away with this. And the biggest customer, it appears to be, of these murder-for-hire abortionists appear to be our own governments in the U.S., Canada, and, of course, in China, right?
Yes. Why, when you say that we get away with it, I come across studies with using aborted baby fetal organs in 2020 and 2021. They're dated, you know, 2020 and 2021. Well, I'm thinking of COVID antiviral pill, molnupiravir, I think it's called.
Yeah, it's
that was tested. That was tested on Ralph Barrick's lung only mice at the University of North Carolina in two different studies in 2020 and also in 2021. And they used aborted baby lung tissue. So they don't say where they got it, but I don't believe. Maybe they did.
Well, you know, the way they had portrayed this, falsely portrayed this, and this was one of the reasons why John Rappaport and others have talked about it. They'll make the kind of statement, well, yeah, we're just going to throw away the parts anyway, so let's put them to a good use. Well, that's not the way these baby parts are harvested at all. It is an abortion for that purpose, scheduled for that, done in a particular way. And as I pointed out, the baby has to still be alive or the organs and other things that they're trying to harvest will be damaged, especially if they do it in the other ways that they commit abortion. So it is that, but it's portrayed that way. Well, you know, it's there, and so we might as well just use it, you know, from a pragmatic standpoint. And yet it is murder for that particular purpose.
But that was all supposed to have been, you know, prohibited by the Trump administration, all the fetal, unless they say, oh, it's private companies doing this and not our private university. But, you know, these are all NIH associated researchers doing, you know, those tests on the molnupiravir. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I have read that the FDA was going to allow exemptions to the Trump administration ban on fetal research. They said they had to review. They had to review the each case, and if they believed the purpose was good or whatever, then they would allow the fetal research. So yeah, maybe they do that for COVID or something.
That's right. Yeah, when they banned all that stuff back in 2014, 2015, and then a couple of years later, Francis Collins, the NIH, introduced the stuff, and people said, "What? You were not supposed to be doing that." So I just made that determination myself. There's absolutely no accountability, and they don't hold people accountable for this if they violate the rules. So it's a very corrupt system, and it is something that people need to be aware of, especially as we talk about the fact that they're going to continue. They're going to offer this as a universal flu and COVID and everything. You know, this is your universal vaccine, and now everybody's really got to get this. We know that's what's coming. They're really going to push that hard. And so you need to know the basis for this, where this came from. And it's going to be a real ethical challenge, not for them. Nobody's going to challenge them for their lack of ethics or unethical murders. No, it's going to be an ethical challenge to you if you're going to take this or not. That's what we're looking forward to in the future. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Julianne Kalarafi. And again, you can find her work, excellent work, great researcher, fetalindustry.com. You can also find her on Twitter at Kind and True. Are you on any other social media platforms? Because Twitter's getting dodgy. Lots of them?
Oh, right. Just Twitter. Yeah. I guess I'll have to think about moving.
Yeah, you better think about it. You better think about it, because I think our days are numbered on these platforms. So, Gab, perhaps, you know, some of the other ones, just as, you know, and let people know that you're going to be there. But right now she's on Twitter at kindandtrue, fetalindustry.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Julianne.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
So
and thank you for the work that you're doing. People need to understand what is behind these heinous, dangerous, toxic medicines. Behind it is pure evil. We'll be right back.
Yes.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. All right. And as we consider what is coming up with these new and improved universal every kind of flu and every kind of COVID virus, and everyone is going to have to get it, you know, everyone, every age, everywhere. Immunization Agenda 2030 is coming from the world's vaccine czar and chief doctor, Bill Gates, because he owns the WHO and a bunch of other organizations. One of the reasons I think everybody is so upset with Rand Paul is that he's taken the line that I have seen over and over again from Reason, from Cato Institute, you know, from the libertarians there, saying, you know, the problem that we've got is that they're taking too long to approve these vaccines. You know, the FDA just takes 10 years is just too long. We shouldn't be running long-term phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 tests. Well, that's how we got to where we are right now. And so if you're going to say something like, you know, we've got to have more vaccines, and we have to do them even more quickly. I'm sorry, that's a non-starter. It's just amazing to me that even these Republicans, they have carved out a little niche for themselves. They will support the vaccine, but they'll be against the mandate, right? That's safe for them, because if they go against the vaccine, they're going against Trump, because it's his juice. It's his Kool-Aid. And they don't want to do that. And they don't want to go against big pharmaceutical companies that own Trump either. And so they'll carve out this little position. Well, you know, it's a miracle vaccine. We really needed this and everything. But I don't think you ought to be forced to take it. Well, you know, why not? I mean, it's free. It's a miracle. Why wouldn't everybody take it? And what a thin little wiggle room they have left for themselves. And then many of them saying, well, you know, we shouldn't be waiting. So and look. From the standpoint of somebody who is an informed person, and they may understand this is an experimental drug, and I've argued this case myself before, but that's not what we're talking about here. But in a case where you got somebody, let's say they're dying of cancer, and there is no available treatment for it, and some people have a new drug, and they say, well, we don't know what this thing is, but if you would like to be a part of the test, we'll let you join the test. It may kill you. It may exacerbate the symptoms. We don't know. Or on the other hand, it might actually work. We don't know. That ought to be people's option to do that. If they have a fatal disease, they ought to be able to opt into a test like that. And I've criticized the fact that they have excluded this from a lot of people in the past. That ought to be able to be their decision to participate in that. It would be something that they could do to help themselves and to help other people to participate in a trial like that. And so that's my only
thing that I would say in terms of the FDA getting in the way of drugs. But when it comes to something, and you know, they all want to pretend that because of COVID, we are all terminal patients. See, that's the fundamental lie about that. That's not true. Not even in their most highly manipulated number game could they make that kind of a case, that it had a high case fatality rate. Never, never. Let's talk a little bit about the mandates and recent updates to that. Now, last night we had a vote in the Senate. And in terms of, again, when you look at this, people are looking at these different policies strictly from a political calculation and from a popularity calculation. And so I think it's very telling that Biden has lost in preliminary injunction hearings. You had a lot of different courts, a lot of different places, a lot of different levels have said, no, you're going to stop the mandates until we consider this. We don't think you've got that kind of authority. And so he's had a lot of losses. And now, because this is so incredibly unpopular, you have even two Democrats, John Tester from Montana and Joe Manchin, of course, from West Virginia, have joined 50 Senate Republicans to say that they are against Biden's private sector vaccine mandate. Now, this is simply a symbolic gesture, frankly, because there's nothing that can happen with this because of the Democrat majority in the House and Pelosi. Even if the Senate and the House were to vote on this to stop Biden, and this was something that was put in going back into the 1990s when Newt Gingrich was there in Congress, they put in what was called the Congressional Review Act. It was approved in the 90s under Gingrich. It allows Congress to review and, if necessary, to overturn new federal regulations put into place by the federal administrations, the bureaucracy, such as OSHA and others. Because we have, over the years, we have, and this is why it is so surprising and reprehensible to me that Rand Paul hasn't attacked this aspect of it. The idea that we have bureaucracies everywhere making all the rules, unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats making these rules, passing the laws for us. It is regulation without representation, just like it is taxation without representation, because they're assessing big fines as part of that as well. And also ignoring the excessive fine prohibition that is in the Constitution. And they can do all that, as I've mentioned over and over again. It's something that I say regularly. If you allow the bureaucracy to write the rules, they're operating under the legal fiction that those are not laws. They're rules. They're not laws. Laws are passed by your elected representatives. If you have rules that are put out there by an unrepresentative, unaccountable bureaucracy, well, then in that case, that is bad enough. You shouldn't be ruled by something from people who are not accountable to you, not elected by you, not accountable to you. But what makes it even worse is that when they make these rules, they say, well, because they're rules and not laws, you don't have any due process, you don't have any trial by jury, you don't have protection against excessive fines. These bureaucracies can do anything they want. So there was a small effort back in the 1990s with Gingrich as the Speaker of the House to say, well, if they come in with one of these things, then we reserve to ourselves the option to undo that. Nancy Pelosi said, we got to pass Obamacare so we can find out what's in it. We're going to pass the general guidelines, and then we're going to kick it over to the bureaucracy. And then if it's something really bad, the Congress that has abdicated what they should have done in the first place can come in and protect you like knights on a white horse from these bad guys in the bureaucracy that put together a rule that you don't like. And so they can come in as heroes and stop it. That's the whole idea. The problem is it's got to be passed by both the House and the Senate. And then the president can overrule that. And he can veto that. And they have to override his veto. So it isn't going to happen. It is simply a statement. However, I still think that it is a positive thing because it will Believe me, political considerations weigh in on these judges when they are making their decisions. And so it's good to see that the majority of the Senate don't agree with this. That way they're going to not have to stick their neck out quite so far. As Fox News points out, even with the Senate approval, the GOP-backed resolution is unlikely to overturn the mandate. The Democrat-controlled House is not expected to take up the measure, and President Biden would likely veto the bill if it cleared Congress. Again, it could be stopped by the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, but because it's about money, the federal government could go through and could enact fines against businesses through the banking system. That's why everything always comes back to the money. It always comes back to the Federal Reserve. In New York City, the New York Police Department mandates for them and for other city workers have now been temporarily halted by a judge there. In Florida, the biggest hospital system in Florida bans all COVID-19 mandates. So that is a positive development for some of the individuals there. Again, that particular part of the mandate, there were four different aspects for Biden's mandates. One executive order for federal employees in the military, a second executive order for the federal contractors. That was the most recent one to have a federal judge, put a halt to that. And they've lost a couple of times on that. And then the 100 plus employees, private businesses, a judge has halted that. And there was also a halt on the fourth one, which is the financial strings and pressure brought to bear by CMS, and that was halted as well. And so both CMS, the people who provide the funding for Medicare and Medicaid, this is all running through the money side of this. You know, the federal government through CMS and Medicare and Medicaid are putting financial pressure on these bean counters in the hospitals, these financial people who are not medical. And then they're telling medical people, you get the vaccine even if in your judgment you don't think it's good. And even if you don't think it's a warranted risk, you're going to do it anyway. So it's always through the financial side. Again, going back to the emergency. 4.2 million workers, says the Washington Post, have quit their job in October. Is that what happened? Did they quit their job? That is one of the most cynical things I've seen, is the fact that they're saying, oh, yeah, we don't know why these people are quitting. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that you're being threatened with this untested genetic code injection. No, they don't want to take that, and so they're quote unquote quitting. That's the most cynical part of this. Yeah, you quit, so we don't give you any unemployment. That type of thing. An NEA board member has come out and said, "The unvaccinated who have a religious exemption deserve to die." This is Molly Page Mumau, a Pennsylvania teacher, member of the board of directors of the National Education Association, or educators. I don't know what the NEA is, educators or education. The NEA, the biggest teachers union. She is on the board of that. She identifies herself as an educator, a wife, a union advocate, a semi-pro wine drinker, an LGBT ally, and Team Pfizer. Team Pfizer. So, you said... on that screenshot that Travis just had up there, she said, this guy did not want to get it. She said, screw this guy, screw them all, who are all about hiding behind religious exemptions because they don't want anybody to tell them what to do. Please tell you what to do all the time. People tell you what to do all the time, and you do it. No, I don't. Especially when they don't have the authority to tell me to do something. It's my duty to disobey, and they don't have the authority to do this. Yeah, people always telling me stuff to do, but I don't do it. He and his ilk deserve whatever comes their way, including losing their jobs, getting sick, and perhaps dying from this virus, says the Team Pfizer person, the little Marxist authoritarian. Yeah, it's so interesting to see these people who identify with Marxism and socialism, and yet they are fascists. They're the biggest fascists. Fascism is economically the union between corrupt governments and corrupt corporations. And that's exactly what we're seeing here. I'm on Team Pfizer. But in the meantime, she said, he's going to put all the people around him in danger. No, you pass this on just as much if you're vaccinated. I don't know why the GOP doesn't take those guns they profess to love so much and just start shooting all of them, all of their constituents who think this way. It would be quicker, ultimately safer, than putting me and my friends and my family at risk. In Canada, you have some people who are speaking out about the fact that they're talking about allowing grocery stores to ban people who do not get their vaccination. You must bow the knee and bear the arm. Do what you're told. You listen. People like that woman are the kinds of people that are going to be teaching your kids in school. Now, not all the teachers are like that, but you don't ever know what they're like, do you? You don't know them. You don't get to pick them. You don't get to see what they're like. I can tell you, I think there's more people like that based on my experience and based on people in my family who are in teaching. I think there's more people like that than there are otherwise. And then finally, the Seattle Times says, is it time to change the definition of fully vaccinated? Well, of course, that is exactly what they're going to do. They've been changing the definition of everything, haven't they? They changed the definition of a vaccine. They changed they specifically did that even before. And that's one of the other leading indicators showing that this whole thing was a plan. The fact that they went in and they removed a very obscure statement, and they put it at like the 500 pages in a 700 and some odd bill before this happened, and said, let's change the definition of a vaccine, because right now our current definition excludes these mRNA vaccines, things that are modifying, you know, proteins that are modifying genes. And so they did that. And if you had even looked at that, you wouldn't really know what that was about at the time. But boy, we do know now, in hindsight, 2020, they've changed the definition of a pandemic. They've changed the definition of a case. They changed the definition of a test. Everything has been changed. Everything is up for grabs, because that's the way that a totalitarians operate. And that's the way the left has always operated, by changing the definition of terms. In Portugal, their definition of deaths, right? Going back and looking at this, they said in an audit in Portugal, they said this is a fraud of unprecedented proportions. Only 152 people died of COVID, not 17,000. We've seen the same thing exposed in Italy, just a few months after you had the panic that was induced by the social media bots out of China. You had, towards the end of the summer, I remember when it happened, you had Italian representatives standing up, screaming, shaking their, you know, stamping their, hammering the podium with their fists, saying it wasn't 20-some-odd thousand people, 25,000 or something like that that died. Not at all. And the same type of thing that happened there. And I thought, well, good, maybe it's going to turn the corner. It didn't. It didn't. I reported the other day that Salvation Army was requiring vaccination for the people to be bell ringers. And I got a letter from a listener who said, recently on your show, you mentioned that Salvation Army bell ringers need to be vaccinated against COVID to ring the bell. So I contacted them, and they said no. And they replied and sent me the email and the response. A vaccination is not required to ring the bells. Thank you for checking in. We appreciate the support. Well, that was after the show. That was on December the 8th. And at this point in time, it's not required. What I was talking about was going back to November the 18th, 2-3 weeks earlier, where the Salvation Army was forced to suspend programs, and they were losing staff, and they were losing volunteers because of the vaccine mandate. So they did have a vaccine mandate, and then they suspended that vaccine mandate about the middle of November. And so it is true that they don't have that anymore, but it is also true that they were requiring it of volunteers before it blew up in their face. A Canadian location lost employees and 80% of its volunteers due to COVID-19 vaccine requirements. So I'm not sure if it happened in the U.S. That's the one thing that I'm not sure of. Or if it was only in Canada where this happened. But I can tell you that as we look at Detroit, and they're talking about the Salvation Army, there's an article that is done by Central Illinois is proud.com. It's a news site. And they show Salvation Army with their mobile soup kitchen and with their mobile vaccination program. So they're going around giving people food and vaccines who are homeless and need help. They talk about a guy, Kenan Carricker, walked up to the Salvation Army mobile soup kitchen, parked in one of the poorest areas of Detroit, for the big hot dogs that came inside bags of food passed out to the city's needy. He left with a meal and his first dose of Moderna. It helped being right there in my neighborhood, he said. Otherwise, he was in no hurry to get vaccinated. Five people received vaccine doses from the Salvation Army on Wednesday at that site, bringing the total to 45 given over the past 4 weeks. Through this program, designed to reach those who have little or no access to churches, community centers, or other places where the vaccines are being given. So Salvation Army is out there giving people the kill shots. Just so you know. May not be happening in every one of these jurisdictions, but they also walked back their white people are evil program that they had put out there as well, denigrating and villainizing everybody who is white based on that. As I said before, this reparations thing that is being pushed by these Marxists, these social Marxists, is being adopted by a lot of the liberal churches. It is the antithesis of Christianity. Christianity, we do not, and certainly, it's about forgiveness. It's about restarting your life. It's not about pulling up sins that you didn't commit that might have been in society 150, 160 years ago. It's not about that. It's about the most unchristian thing I've ever seen for these Christian organizations to start beating their people and themselves for something that they didn't do, even. This is from a listener who says, I was delighted to see this news today. Baylor University saying that it will no longer require employees to get a COVID-19 vaccine. And the person who sent this to me said, okay, so now I'll do the same thing for your students. If any of the students develop blood clotting, myocarditis, or other medical complications associated with these dangerous, unnecessary mRNA injections, shame on you and your staff for allowing that to happen. And so he sent that to, that's what he sent to the president of Baylor. And then he forwarded that to me. I'm glad that he did. And he said, students everywhere deserve the same as university staff and faculty. That's right. Nobody should be required to do this. Everybody should have an exemption. But, you know, hey, it's going around. Everybody's got to get the shot. Just no medical exemptions, no religious exemptions. And if you get an exemption, you should die. You should have medical care denied to you. You should have a job denied to you. Travel should be denied to you. Food should be denied to you. You should be, as a matter of fact, put into a FEMA camp. This letter from another listener. Hello, David. Don't judge everyone living in Portland, Oregon as a useful idiot for the technocratic corporate fascists. No, I don't. As a matter of fact, interestingly enough, I love Portland, Oregon, and that area in terms of not the city, not the politicians, and not the politics, but it's a beautiful area. I got a chance to go up there several times as a reporter, and I went back. My family did on a vacation, one of our favorite vacations as a family was up in that area, Portland, Washington State, and I understand that it's these centers, the cities where they're imposing this on the rest of the people who live in the beautiful areas of Oregon. And they would like to associate themselves with a different state. They would like to secede. I understand that. What I've noticed when I've gone up there, I have been recognized more in the Oregon and Washington rural areas than anywhere else I've gone. I've had people recognize me when I wasn't even talking, when I was walking around. I was really surprised, kind of taken back. I don't So if ever you see that, please forgive me if I kind of seem surprised and taken back, and I don't say much because it is something that really surprised me. But he talks about how they are fighting this every way that they can in Oregon, and I would have read the rest of the letter, but I ran out of time. Thank you for listening. That's it for today's program. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.